then go to the window, open it, then stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I can drag it into the bathroom and drown in the bathtub.
You bet I cut the taxes at the top.
How dare you? How dare you? Go ahead. Make my day.
The Rick Smith Show starts now.
Welcome, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, lovers of freedom, fairness, and democracy, truth, justice, the American way. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks for being here. Tonight on the big program, we're going to be talking with Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach about the budget, about tort reform, pretty much the entire right-wing, anti-worker, anti-American cocktail that they're serving up here in Pennsylvania as we speak. A guy who probably has been here a handful of times in his life, the most powerful man in Pennsylvania. A guy I would venture to guess at least half to 70% of the people in this state have never heard of, know nothing about, but he is the most important man in the state.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
Yep, that's the Grover Norquist mentality. It's not that I don't like government, it's just that I want it small enough where I can drag it in the bathtub and drown it. That, my friends, is the right-wing game plan. There is no simpler soundbite that you're ever going to hear than the most powerful man in Pennsylvania tonight telling you what his vision of government is, how he believes government should be run. It shouldn't be. It should be drug into the bathtub and drowned. And I've been saying for years, it amazes me that the Republican Party keeps putting people into office who do not believe in government, who do not believe that government could do anything right. And then they screw it up and go, see, we told you. Just like what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now, you got basically my two-year-old. With her fingers in her ears, her feet stomping on the ground, having a hissy tantrum. I didn't get my way. They took my lollipop. And they take their ball and go home. Is this the direction the country's going to go? Are we going to collapse? Are we going to end up in massive crisis because we've got a handful of these T-Twizzlers who have now taken over? A handful of these little Norquist robots who signed this stupid pledge. Understand, 275 of the 288 representatives in Washington, the Republicans, 275 of the 288 signed Norquist's ignorant pledge. I will not raise taxes, no matter what happens. No matter if we start another war, and no matter what happens. Not gonna raise taxes under any conditions. So it'll be interesting to see what Senator Leach has to say, since here they're talking about raising a hospital tax. Oh, no, I'm sorry, not a tax. It's a fee. We'll talk about that a little bit here, but I'm gonna see what his opinion on that is. In the second hour, we're gonna talk with Jim White, organizing director with the Sheet Metal Workers International Union, about the NLRB. You know, I saw something really interesting today. The only people talking about the NLRB's new proposed rules, fake news on Fox. Not really a story to anybody else, but the radical right wing losing their mind. How dare they use the the National Labor Relations Board to help workers. How dare they? They should be doing what they used to do, sticking it to those workers. How many people remember the Kentucky River cases? How many people remember the NLRB actually taking rights from workers by saying, oh, 2 minutes a day, you fill out a piece of paper, that makes you management. You're not eligible. I didn't hear fake news on Fox going ballistic about that when they're stealing rights from workers. No, didn't hear that. But man, try and level the platform. Try to level that playing field. Try to give workers an equal shot. Hell no, we're not going to stand for that. And when we talk with Jim White, we're going to talk about some of the organizing horror stories that have been going on over the years, like Smithfield, 17 years. Like the Rite Aid Distribution Center in Lancaster, California, 5 years in the making. And there are hundreds more. So it'll be interesting to talk to Jim White about that. Also in the second hour, Julia Ramsey, political director at Action United. I'm going to talk about this whole school choice thing. It's popping its head up again. You know, it's one of those things you just can't, with as much money as they've got, which is with as much money as being rammed into this whole voucher thing, this whole lottery thing, you just can't kill it. But that's why we're going to continue to expose exactly what it is. There's no choice. Stop with that. It's not going to save money. It's not going to make the schools any better. Stop it. It's about profit. It's about privatization. That's it. Bottom line. So we'll talk to Julia Ramsey about that. Also, your calls, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. If you're near your computer, you can watch us live here in the studio on our video there at the website. If you miss any portion of the program, right there for you to download. So we keep hearing this whole, we need to be more business friendly. We need to be wealthy friendly. We need to cut taxes, cut that top corporate rate down from 35 down to 25. In fact, some Republican presidential candidates, let's just do away with it. All those taxes on rich people, they don't pay them anyway, like George Bush said. Just do away with them because they create jobs. I don't know if you've noticed, 9.1% unemployment rate, and they have gotten an awful lot of money from us. They're sitting on boatloads of cash. What I find amazing is this whole messaging machine, man, it's amazing. I saw Jeb Bush's kid, George P. I kind of wish the Bush family would get some new names. George P. Can anybody guess what P stands for? Anybody once, twice? Prescott. Come on, Prescott. Yes, the grandfather. There you go. But he had this funny little quip at the Republican Leadership Conference last weekend that I heard. And he said, you know, because they're priming him to be the next, you know, political Bush to get out there. Oh, God help us. Anyway, he had this little quip that, you know, he thought was funny, and so did all the Republicans, you know, pounding their chests. Oh, that's funny. He says that he's more likely to see a UFO than a Social Security check. And what's kind of sad about this is it's a bold-faced lie. And everybody, I think, should know that it's a bold-faced lie. Bernie Sanders had something to say. He said, you know, Social Security's not going broke. It has $2.2 trillion in surplus. But what's going on? It's this whole messaging machine towards, well, you know, we're broke, so we should take... It's your typical gambling addict's mentality. We're going to take the money that we've got in Social Security because we're going broke anyway. It's going to collapse anyway. And, you know, you're going to see a UFO before you see a Social Security check. So, you know, let's double down. Let's take that money, you know, that is backed by the full faith and credit of the federal government and is in T-bills and all that stuff, and let's take it out of the IOUs. Let's take the IOUs and let's take it to the casino. Yeah! Roll the dice, put it on Wall Street so our criminal friends can profit from it. Yeah, that's what we'll do so they can steal the rest of that. And that's the game plan. You got the Koch brothers out there spending big bucks trying to get that pot of money so that they can go to the casino. And just like they did from the end of the Clinton years all the way up until the collapse in September of 2008, they were having a high old drunken time at the casino. They were doing great. They were rolling the dice, flipping the cards, because they knew They knew that you and me were going to pick up the tab. We were insuring it. Same thing here. It's our money that they want to gamble with. And it's, you know, I got to be honest. You gave me $1 million and said, Rick, here's $1 million. Go have fun. I think I could have fun on $1 million. I think I could have a lot more fun with $2.2 trillion, which is exactly what they want to do. They want to take that money that is ours, and they want to gamble it. All of these schemes that the right's coming up with, all of them, are about stealing from you and me. And you keep hearing the messaging machine going across this country. And we're going to hear about it in the next couple of days. How do we restrain the people? How do we restrain the rabble, the unwashed masses, those working people? How do we make sure we protect the corporate elites? How do we make sure we protect them? And one of the things they've been preaching for years, tort reform, need tort reform. And you look at Oklahoma right now. They passed legislation to cap non-economic damages at $350,000. So I guess if you chop somebody's legs off, the most they can sue you for is $350,000 plus whatever money you would have earned working that minimum wage job. And that's the maximum. That's it. Cap. That means you're not going to get that. That's the maximum. And there are 18 states who this year have passed similar legislation to be more business friendly. And you see our Supreme Court, 79% of all cases having to do with business are cited for on the business side. Even, and this is the part that most people don't want to hear, even the more liberal justices in a lot of cases side with the business side. That's a scary thing. So now here we're talking about a budget here in Pennsylvania, and it's a draconian budget. They're talking about $27.149 billion, which is a cut down from the $27.3 billion that the governor originally proposed. Because, hey, we can outcut you. So they wanted to increase this tax on hospitals. They wanted a proposed hospital assessment as part of the budget. So Grover Norquist, the most powerful man in Pennsylvania, wrote and said, if the proposed hospital tax increase is included in the budget, it should be offset by some form of tax relief, meaning cuts to those poor people. He says, otherwise, Americans for Tax Reform will score any yay vote by a taxpayer protection pledge signer as a violation of the commitment they made to their constituents. And, of course, you know, Tom Corbett came groveling on his knees. But if you look at the law, it's called a fee. It calls it a fee. It's not a tax. It's a fee. Grover's not buying it. Just like we didn't buy when he called the unemployment tax that he wanted to put on workers a contribution. And I look at this. This guy, Norquist, the most powerful guy in this state. And what are we doing? We're letting an outsider decide what we get. It's amazing stuff. Absolutely amazing. And while we're struggling to make ends meet and we're struggling to make sure that senior citizens get care, children get education, the wealthy are doing wildly well and they're walking away. And we're not all in this together, no matter what anybody says. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach, right back after this.
I got a picture in my pocket of the lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat. It is my business hat. I'm up to 1 a.m. I must tell you that I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Forging the Flame of Justice, Interfaith Worker Justices National Conference in Chicago, brought together hundreds of clergy from all over America. Interfaith Worker Justice Public Policy Associate Tom Schellebarger says attacks on workers' rights fly in the face of religious teaching and values.
The assault on workers and worker organizing in particular, it really strikes a discord with religious leaders. Religion by its very nature is communitarian, and the economic philosophy that's behind most of the attacks on worker organizing is very individualistic and materialistic. It runs counter to what most religions teach about who we are as human beings.
Shella Barger says the work of Interfaith Worker Justice upholds the dignity and rights of workers.
For Interfaith Worker Justice, our focus is on how do we allow workers to have a voice and a say in the work that they do. If we believe in democracy, then we believe in individuals having the right to be a part of what determines their life. Nothing determines your life more than your workplace.
The AFL-CIO's Union Summer Internship Program is underway with 45 students working in 8 cities on community and labor movement building projects. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that Union Summer gives young people an opportunity to give back to their communities as they help to rebuild the middle class and create a voice for all working people. Trumka says Union Summer is part of a young worker outreach program that also includes the upcoming second annual Next Up Summit of young workers in Minneapolis. About 125 workers at GM's Lake Orion plant took a strike vote on Wednesday. Results are expected as soon as today, after members have been notified of the results. The workers reportedly make less than $10 an hour working for a company called Link Logistics, doing parts logistics for GM inside that plant. The workers signed union cards to join the UAW, but have yet to reach a contract agreement. UAW Local 5960 President Pat Sweeney says the union is fighting for a living wage for the workers. The roughly $20,000 these workers earn annually is below the federal poverty line for a family of four. GM is launching the Chevy Sonic this summer at the plant, the only subcompact to be made in the U.S. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary for Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Texas is a right-to-work state. Texas is a great state. We could be the Texas of the Northeast.
They're selling make-believe, we don't buy that here. 'Cause in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down. While the boss man takes his bonus pay, chips on out of town. D.C.'s bailing out them bankers as a farmer's option. While they're living it up on Wall Street in that New York City town, here in the real world, they're shutting Detroit down.
And we've got a governor who wants to make Pennsylvania look just like Texas, a state with one of the highest uninsured rates, a state with one of the lowest academic achievement rates, a state that has the highest number of workers making minimum wage. That sounds like the kind of state I don't want to emulate. And I got this press release today from the Corporate Alliance, I mean the Citizens Alliance of Pennsylvania, one of these right-wing corporate groups, you know, kind of going out there saying, well, let me read it. June 30th is the deadline for legislators and Governor Tom Corbett to come to an agreement on the state budget. This is a very important moment. At this very moment, career legislators are trying to pressure Governor Corbett into breaking his twofold promise to, one, hold the line on spending, and two, not to raise taxes. These career politicians are trying to persuade Governor Corbett to spend above his established threshold of $27.3 billion, and they're trying to get him to impose a new tax on the only industry in Pennsylvania creating good-paying jobs. Does anybody remember what Governor Corbett did before he was governor? Career politician. Amazing stuff. But hey, no sense wasting a good frame. Anyway, I've got our good friend on the line, Pennsylvania Senator Dalen Leach. Happy birthday, Dalen.
Hey, Rick, it's good to be with you. There's nowhere I'd rather be on my birthday.
I appreciate that. So I got to know, did you get the letter from Grover?
I saw the press release from Grover. I haven't checked my mail. Usually Grover calls me directly.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I actually debated him one time on something called Tabor, which was something...
The Taxpayer Bill of Rights.
Yep. And his knowledge is not very deep on that topic either. But apparently, he is the arbiter of what we are allowed to do in Pennsylvania. He doesn't live in Pennsylvania. He's not registered to vote here. He doesn't pay taxes here. But unless he gives it the green light, the governor and many people in the legislature are unwilling to enact any policy that he does not approve of.
And what's amazing to me is the power, and it's the money that he has. I mean, you've got 275 of the 288 Republicans in Washington and in Congress who have signed his insane pledge. And there are a handful here.
Yeah, no, and it truly is an insane pledge. I mean, for people who don't know, what it says is that, you know, I will not raise taxes, fees, or any revenue of any kind ever, no matter, you know, what the purpose of the revenue is, no matter how much we need the revenue, no matter how small the increase is or how great the need is. Keep in mind that this pledge is not, says the same thing whether you sign it in Pennsylvania or Idaho or Mississippi. Every state has a totally different set of circumstances. He doesn't care what the circumstances are. He doesn't care what the individual problems in a given state may be. He doesn't even know what our tax rates are. He just knows they should be lower.
Well, what he knows, and it's part of the game plan, and it, using his own words, listen to Grover here.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
That's the game plan.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of course, the reason he doesn't like government is because historically it has played some modicum of a role in providing some level playing field in society. It's provided some role in protecting consumers, protecting civil rights, protecting workers. And this is something that sort of the corporate titans that fund Grover Norquist and people like him have absolutely no interest in. They want, and I heard your lead into this segment, they want us to be Texas, where, you know, you can brag about creating lots of jobs, but the jobs don't pay anything, they don't have any benefits, and they don't have any rules. So, you know, I mean, you can create an awful lot of jobs if you don't have to pay your workers anything.
Well, there's a Republican presidential candidate, the Tea Party Queen, who has said we should abolish the minimum wage, and if people want to work for a dollar an hour, that would create jobs.
And she's right. It would create jobs. In fact, slavery itself created jobs. There was very low unemployment rate among the slave population.
But here's the problem with that. The wealth class realized that if you had slaves, you actually owned them and you had to feed them and house them. It's easier just to rent them and let them fend for themselves.
Right, because, you know, if you own slaves, in today's dollars, it may cost, you know, I don't know, $20 a day to do all those things, to provide them with shelter, with clothing, with food, or, you know, I don't know what the figure would be. But you're absolutely right. It's much cheaper just to pay them half of that and tell them to get their own clothing, food, and shelter, and not worry about whether they actually can or not.
Well, let's talk about this insane budget. Have you? I'm assuming the Democrats aren't even in the room. I'm assuming maybe you're following it on Twitter like we are.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Governor Corbett, before he was elected, said several things. First of all, he said that he was going to meet with every single legislator when he became governor.
Did you get your meeting?
Not yet. In fact, he has a legislative affairs director whose job it is to meet with legislators. I mean, that's their full-time job. I met with her predecessor in the Rendell administration, you know, when we were in session one, two times a week. I've yet to meet this person. I could not pick her out of a lineup. She's never called me, emailed me, met with me. Really has no interest in anything that the Democrats had to say. When Governor Corbett was running, he said, I don't care who people are. I want to work with Democrats. I want to work with Republicans. But it's hard to work with Democrats when you don't actually invite them in the room.
So, because the important part of this, and I think it's important for Democrats to make the point that this budget, as horrible as it is going to be, had no fingerprints of the Democratic Party or any Democratic legislators on it.
Oh, absolutely not. When you say we're not in the room, that's literally true. There, I mean, you know, our leadership, and the House leadership, they're not invited to the meetings where the budget's discussed. When they say budget negotiations, people get the impression that all the legislative leaders, as they were under Rendell, are in the room. Not true. Just the Republicans in the room. Democrats are not allowed into the room, not even told when the meetings are.
Yeah, there's part of me that hopes that they don't get it done on time, just to kind of highlight how insane some of them are and how far this is going. Because, you know, you look at these cuts, the almost $1 billion the governor wants to steal from K through 12 education. He wants to cut higher ed by 56%. All of these drastic, draconian, painful cuts that are going to harm families, going to harm children. Somebody's got to be responsible for it, and it's got to be them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think they're going to own that, and I think they're already feeling the backlash about it. I mean, you know, we know nationally that the Democrats have won not only the New York congressional race, the Jacksonville mayor race, a bunch of other races where Democrats usually don't win since the Republicans took over, in large part because people are, you know, the Republican agenda, when people actually see what it is, scares the bejesus out of them. But in Pennsylvania, you know, just a few months ago, we took a district that Tom Corbett had won by 10 points, and we had a very hotly contested state Senate race, and we elected the Democrat, Judy Schwenk, despite the fact the Republicans spent, close to $1 million on that race. We elected her by 16 points. That is a 26-point shift in just a few months when people heard what the Corbett agenda is. So, I mean, I think I'm optimistic about how things are going to go in 2012. But, you know, 2012 is a long way away. So you're right. They're passing really, really horrible policies that are going to damage our state for many years to come.
And then the thing here is, Senator Leach, there's, from what I understand, there's somewhere around 600 and, budget surplus around $675 million coming by the end of the month?
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind what the budget surplus means. That means that we estimated an amount of money that the tax rates we have, not changing the tax rates at all, the tax rates we have, we're going to generate X number of dollars. Turns out the economy performed a little better than that, and they generated an extra $600 million. So you really don't have to take away, you know, librarians and tutors from kids and schools. We actually have the money to pay for that. You really don't have to take away people's long-term care for their grandmother. We actually have the money to pay for that. But Corbett says something that's extremely irrational, which is we can't spend more than, $27.3 billion because, quote, that's all the money we have. But that's not all the money we have. We have $600 million more than that. Beyond that, of course, you know, when people say we have to live within our means, that is true. That is not only politically true, it's constitutionally true. However, we do get to set what our means are.
Exactly.
Okay? And so it's a silly statement. And to say that we're not going to try to find new revenue sources just doesn't make any sense. It's like, you know, Republicans always say, we got to run government like a family, you know, like the
kitchen table.
Yeah, you know, kitchen table. Well, can you imagine a breadwinner coming home and saying, you know what, we're going to have to cut no new shoes this year. We're going down to two meals a day, and no more books for the kids. But the one thing I promise you is we will not accept any new income into this house. I will not get a second job. I will not ask for a raise. If I find money on the street, which is what the $600 million essentially is, I will not spend it on this family.
And everyone takes cold showers.
Yeah. I mean, can you imagine someone saying that? You'd think that they'd probably be arrested by Children and Youth Services.
Yeah, but the question is did the parents take a tax, an anti-spending pledge?
Yeah, well, look, as long as Grover Norquist is happy, I don't know why any of us has any right to be unhappy.
It's just absolutely amazing to me. Another thing that caught my attention, the governor is now making this plea for tort reform. I just noticed in Oklahoma, they've just passed a cap on non-economic damages, $350,000. 18 other states across the country. Really a very business-friendly climate we have now in this country, where we want to make sure that the wealth class is protected from those rabble, those unwashed masses.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I mean, this is something I've been extremely involved in. I led the floor fight against this horrible bill. What they are doing, look, just so everyone understands what we're talking about, in a perfect world, when someone's injured by a number of different entities, you know, a hospital, a doctor, or, you know, a trucking company, a driver, whatever it is, the jury comes back apportioning each party with a percentage of fault. In a perfect world, each party would pay their percentage of fault. When one party doesn't have the money, for one reason or another, to pay their percentage, a perfect world is no longer possible. There's going to be an injustice somewhere in some way. We have always believed it is better to protect the innocent person than a guilty person. And they are completely turning that on their head. They are putting 100% of the risk of someone who can't pay on the victim. You know, and taking, and 0% of the risk on the other entity that caused the harm. So, you know, the question I kept asking during the debate that no one on the other side would answer is, what happens to these people? These people who would be compensated under current law, who will not be compensated under this new law, what happens to their medical bills? What happens if they need nursing care? Who pays for that? Who pays for their kids' education? Who pays their mortgage? Who makes sure their family doesn't lose their home? They would, you know, because it's irresponsible to pass a law like this.
Yeah, I guess my first question back would be, do the injured parties make campaign contributions?
No. That's, you know, that's the tragedy here. The people that the governor and his budget are messing with are not big donors. I mean, poor people, not big donors. You know, elementary kids, not big donors. Victims of accidents, you know, they don't have any money anymore. So, I mean, whereas the people who are supporting this, I mean, you know, you look at the insurance industry, you look at the Chamber of Commerce. These are industries, incidentally, some of these, like which are making record profits.
Yep.
They're making record profits. And we're going to say, you know what, you don't even, they exist because society needs an entity that makes sure that injured people, you know, are not on the streets. And we're saying you don't even have to do that anymore. You can make even more record profits. And that joint and several bill is just absolutely obscene. It's disgusting.
But you know what it is it's, I think, and I think you're right, I think the Republicans will be in trouble in 2012, and they need to ram through all of this insanity at once while they still have the power. Another one of these insane pieces of legislation, this voter ID bill, where they're trying to steal people's right to the ballot box. I remember during the Employee Free Choice Act fight, they were saying, oh, you're going to steal the right to the secret ballot. Well, what do you think they're doing right now?
Oh, yeah, this is nothing but naked politics. There are groups in society who Republicans feel vote the wrong way, okay? And so they are trying to make it more difficult for those groups to vote. Now, this picture ID thing, I mean, keep in mind, you go to a poll, let's say you're 80 years old, you've been going to the same poll for 62 years, okay?
Yep.
And, you know, Mabel at the poll knows you. In fact, you know, she lives next door to you. But you still can't vote if you don't have a picture ID, okay? Now, who doesn't have pictures ID? Disproportionately. It's not wealthy Caucasian people in the suburbs. It's poor people. It's elderly people. It's minorities. It's people like that who, you know, don't have a car, so they don't have a driver's license.
But here's my problem with this. They have not shown me that there is a problem. I've yet to see perp walks of people who voted illegally. Where's the front page story?
Rick, think about it, Rick. You know why voter fraud of the type they're talking about is such a rare crime? Because there's no benefit to it. I mean, let's say I commit fraud, risk a felony conviction, and I get to vote twice. Big deal. How many elections, you know, let's say I vote to get to vote 10 times. How many elections are going to be decided by that? Who's going to take that risk? You know how many voter fraud cases there have been in the last 20 years in Pennsylvania? 4.
Wow.
Those were all strange cases. We are changing the law. We're going to take away the right to vote to thousands and thousands of people who vote overwhelmingly Democratic because of these 4 cases. The reality is these 4 cases have nothing to do with it. What has something to do with it is these people vote the wrong way. They want to make sure that doesn't happen anymore.
No, like Paul Rayrick said, you know, our power, like my high school government teacher said, stay home, don't bother vote, it makes my power that much greater. Amazing stuff. Last question I've got, the budget. Did they get it done today? Will it be a handshake thing tonight?
Well, again, since we're not in the room, all we know is what we read on Capitol Wire. But We're told that there's some sort of conceptual agreement, but there are still details to be worked out. So I'm not sure what the timetable is. I do know we go back Sunday at 4, and it's very unusual to go in on a Sunday. So presumably they'll have something for us to vote on. The reason we're going back in on Sunday is so we can start the clock on certain numbers of days that things have to be considered.
Right.
So presumably by, like, Tuesday, we'll have something to vote on. But I don't know that for sure. We get no information.
Amazing, amazing times. And I'm hoping voters are listening, Dalen.
Thanks.
Senator Leach, I appreciate your time. Always great having you on the program. Thanks so much.
Talk to you soon.
All righty. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Come on, Obama. Do it. Stand up. Stand tall. Stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
You helped to turn America blue. Now let's keep it that way. The Rick Smith Show. This is the time.
The thing, you know, is, are they making this a place worth living? I mean, I'm looking at this budget. I'm looking at the things that they want to do. The fact that Grover Norquist, Mr.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You know, the most powerful man in Pennsylvania right now. Did you vote for him? I didn't vote for him. I didn't even know he was on the ballot. But he's got control. He's the puppet master. He's the man pulling the strings. And what bothers me is that, as Dalen Leach said, there's no opposition in the room. This is all Republican doing. They control everything. Democrats can't stop anything. This is a steamroller out of control. And you look at places like Wisconsin, same thing. If it weren't for the brave 14 senators who fled the state, they'd have been steamrolled over too. You look at what's going on in Washington, where you got Eric Cantor, you know, basically like my 2-year-old taking the ball and going home. Well, you want to have tax increases. You want to make someone, one of my campaign donors, pay. And what the reality here is, with the dollar being the reserve currency of the globe, I truly believe these Republicans want a global collapse. And what Democrats need to realize right from the beginning is that you cannot deal with terrorists. You cannot negotiate with terrorists. Sorry, not going to happen. You cannot have a rational conversation with a 2-year-old. It doesn't happen. Ask any parent. And you look at what they're doing. They are holding this country hostage. We are still in a hostage situation. Why? Because they want to protect their special few. They want to protect their handfuls. Look at this report that just came out. The World Wealth Report, put out by, who was it by? It's by Merrill Lynch and Capgemini, talking about the world's high net worth individuals. And they say, look, we're not all in this together. The U.S. economy's weak. The U.K.'s economy's flat. Greece is in big trouble. Working people are struggling. Wages are stagnant. Homes are being foreclosed upon. Talking about austerity across the globe. Cut, 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 cut for those working people. Cut for you, cut for you. Oh, but you, the wildly wealthy, as this new report shows, they're getting more prosperous by the day. In fact, according to this report by the Merrill Lynch and Capgemini people, the globe's richest now have recouped the losses they suffered after the 2008 banking crisis. They're back, and they're richer than ever. And there's a couple more of them, nearly 11 million overall. 11 million more overall. So now you look at this. You look at these high net worth individuals. And according to the report, these high net worth individuals, they've got somewhere around $42.7 trillion. These are people who've got more than $1 million rolling around in their pockets. Now, the ultra-high net worth individuals, those super rich, those extra special elite, those folks with, you know, at least $30 million looking for somewhere to go, you know, the super rich, they have climbed 10% to 103,000 people. 103,000 people. That's a good size college football stadium. I don't know how many people Penn State get in their stadium. I don't think it's 103. I think Michigan gets probably 103. Right, Jake? Somewhere around there?
I believe Michigan's up around 110, Rick. A little bit bigger.
We could put all of these people into Michigan Stadium, one stadium. They are worth $15 trillion. $15 trillion, just a stadium full of people. And they're getting richer and richer quicker. In fact, the richer you are, the richer you get quicker. These 103,000 people, that's it, a stadium full of people, control almost 40% of the global wealth. Almost 40% of everything on this planet. Think about that. They keep telling us we're broke. Rick, we're broke. We can't afford to pay health care for Granny. Rick, we're broke. We can't educate those kids. Rick, we're broke. We can't help those poor people. We're not broke. Not all of us, just you and me. But that's what they keep telling us. Three countries control 53% of the wealth, the U.S., Japan, and Germany. The U.S. Big, big money here. But we're broke, remember? Now, China and India, they're catching up. They've got somewhere around, they're high wealth, they're high value folks, taking almost $12 trillion of the pot because we've basically given it to them. And you look at this. We are splitting fast. The very wealthy are running away from the rest of us. And you and I, we're going to be stuck with austerity. We're going to be stuck with this idea that, well, you know, our best days are behind us because we got to, you know, we can't invest in roads and bridges and education and healthcare. We can't do it, Rick. Sorry, man. We got to give money to the corporations. We got to give money to the rich people because, after all, they give us jobs. Remember, they give us jobs. And I would think, I would think that we would have learned that lesson September of 2008, October of 2008, November of 2008, December of 2008, January of 2009, February of 2009. Down the line, we would have learned that nobody gives us jobs. They take our labor and they compensate us for it if we can make them more money. The second we can no longer make them more money, to the curb with you, we are renting you. And what bothers me about this budget thing, you've got these children on the right, these people who hate government, these people who hate anything that we the people do, walking out of negotiations, walking out of the room, basically wanting to create another crisis and this globe to collapse. And like Washington Times reporter Stephen Dinane wrote, the Congressional Budget Office, in its latest long-term budget outlook released Wednesday, said a do-nothing scenario would leave the government's ledger in primary balance by 2017. So if they do nothing on the budget, don't cut anything. You know, let the Bush tax cuts go. Let the alternative minimum tax take effect. Let the Affordable Care Act take effect. We're going to be all right. See, they need this. They need this crisis. They need the debt ceiling. They need that. They need that to create an even greater crisis and to put us on edge. They need to hold us hostage right now because they know. They know that's their bargaining chip. That's it. Because they're not going to get that pound, that 100 pound, that 1,000 pounds of flesh if they don't use this bargaining chip. And they don't create the crisis that they need. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. What do you think? Where do we go with this? What do you do with a 2-year-old who just walks out of the room? Back after this.
In an ocean of red, Rick Smith.
Ask me, Council 13 members, did you know that you have voluntary benefits available to you that you can pay for through the ease of payroll deduction? Ask me, Council 13 offers a voluntary benefits package to help provide money when you or a covered family member incurs one of these life events, accidents, critical illness, disability, or death. No one can avoid life's unfortunate situations. However, AFSCME Council 13 has provided you with the opportunity to ease the financial burden on your family by preparing now. Find out more about Trustmark's voluntary benefits. BBS Benefit Solutions can help you get the security you need. Call BBS at 1-866-902-2561. Again, call BBS at 1-866-902-2561.
Hi, I'm Bob Snyder, president of Teamsters Local 776 here in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. For more than 100 years, Teamsters have been standing together to create a better tomorrow. We Teamster members are your friends and neighbors. Teamsters move goods across the nation, take care of seniors, serve and protect our community, and so much more. We are hardworking, dedicated, professional workers, united to make our lives, our communities, and our nation stronger. If you want to be part of the team, join the Teamsters for a better tomorrow. Contact us at 1-800-692-6280. That's 1-800-692-6280. Or visit our website at TeamstersLocal776.org. We are people helping people.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Yep, yep, and he wants tax cuts. Wants to make sure that the wildly wealthy can have their yachts and their swimming pools. Wants to make sure that they can live in their gated communities, away from you, the rabble, the unwashed masses. You know, I still remember my grandfather telling the stories. And look, you know, I remember taking your grandmother to this fancy restaurant, and the boss seeing you. He didn't want you there. Didn't want you at the same play. Didn't want you at the same restaurant. They don't want to see you driving the same car. They're better than you are. And that's when it all started going south. When they realized that if the working class made smart decisions with their money, saved a little bit of it, and then, you know, hey, bought some nice things for themselves, that they could be in the same room together on equal footing. That, to me, is the amazing part of all of this. That's what this is about. This is about them not wanting to be near us. Not that we don't want to be near them. They don't want us in the room. They don't want us at the table. They want us on the menu. It's pretty much that simple. And you look at this whole budget nonsense. There are common sense solutions here. Look, I'm willing to take some pain. I'm willing to say, you know what, times are tough. We need to all throw in. If we're all in this together, we're truly all in this together. Something might have to be done. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to let the Bill Gates of the world, the Warren Buffetts of the world, walk away unscathed. They're going to need to chip in, too. They need to be in this together with us. Or am I missing something, Jake?
Absolutely not.
And when you look at the whole direction the Republicans have taken, this whole Grover Norquist anti-tax pledge, understand the people, the Republicans that you voted for, 275 out of the 288 in Washington signed that insane pledge that said no matter what, no matter when, no matter how, I don't care, I am never going to agree to a tax increase. Never. That's the game, man. And I look at all of the problems that we've got. And all the problems we've got could be solved with a couple of things. A good jobs program, put people back to work, start paying taxes back into the coffers. Sane trade, smart to me, you know, maybe create some jobs here at home. I'm not seeing the Colombia, the South Korea, and the Panamanian. I'm not seeing those as the answer. And fortunately today, the UAW, United Auto Workers, came out and said, you know what, we're not going to support the Colombian Free Trade Agreement. Their rationale was simply that, you know, hey, they're still killing our people. They're still killing union members. You know, and I would think, and maybe you've got a different take, Jake, but in radical self-interest, if a UAW official goes to Colombia for who knows what, a junket, something, he doesn't want to get killed. And understand, last year, 49 union leaders were killed in Colombia. You know how many were killed in the U.S. last year? How many were assassinated, pulled off a bus, shot in the head, thrown out of an airplane? You know how many? None. You know how many CEOs were shot in the head in Colombia, pulled off a plane, pulled off a bus? How many? None. That's why the CEOs are in favor of it. Simple.
Well, we keep hearing these optimistic reports from those who want a free trade agreement. They keep saying, well, things are improving, the government's making every effort. Well, you know what? The proof is in the pudding, Rick. Very few of those thousands of murders, very few of those responsible were brought to justice. It's a system that's corrupt. It's a system that's dominated by corporate interest. It's a system that's dominated by very powerful, rich families within Colombia. It's a nation at war with itself. And then you have some very powerful forces down there who control the drug trade. It's a country at war with itself. Why would we want to do trade with that country, even above the issue of not having basic protection for their workers? It makes no sense. At the end of the day, the only ones who are going to prosper are some very, very powerful special interests.
And, you know, you look at this, and you know, the UAW had better start looking at, sticking with everybody else, because these trade agreements, again, these are not going to create jobs in this country. Even though the Republicans and that John Hovind, the Republican from North Dakota, did his weekly radio address last week saying, we need to have these. We need to create jobs. But we don't need to, you know, to do anything with the trade adjustment assistance program. Now think about this for a second. If it's going to create all these jobs, thousands of jobs, because unemployment's at 9.1%, remember? We got a spiraling deficit, so we need to get these agreements right on through so we can create them their jobs. If we do that, and they're supposed to create all these jobs, why do we worry about the trade adjustment assistance program? There will be no workers that have to worry about it, right? Or am I missing something? Because, you know, you're saying it's going to create jobs. Lots of them. Lots of them. Why are you worrying, on the other hand, that we're going to lose them? I mean, if you really believe, this is one of those step up and actually vote what you truly believe. Because if you truly believe it's going to create jobs, why are you worrying about the trade adjustment assistance program? Because you're not going to lose any. Right? And the few that you do you lose, you're going to want to retrain those workers to get them into the new jobs, right? Isn't that how it's supposed to work? So if you truly bought into this, which I really don't believe Mr. Hovind, the senator from North Dakota, believes. It's just what his campaign donors are telling him. But if you truly believe that, you'd pass it along. Some good news and interesting news to me. The United Auto Workers and leaders of other unions around the world who represent Fiat and Chrysler have reached an agreement in Turin, Italy, to negotiate together. This is one of those things that I think is great. When you're talking about a global company, you have global unions. You have the ability then to make sure that working conditions, no matter where, are at least livable, are reasonable, are up to standard. And this is where the labor movement is going to have to go into the next century as we continue, because globalization is not going to end. It's with us. It's always been with us. But it's expanding more. It's opening more. So we need to be able to reach out, protect workers in other countries. And I think this is really, really exciting. And I'm hopefully in the coming days we can get somebody from the UAW to talk about this. Anyway, the NLRB has been in the news. When we come back, we're going to talk with Jim White from the Sheet Metal Workers Union, the organizing director there, about some of the stories, some of the organizing things that have been going on, and exactly what this means. Because Fox News is just beyond livid with any talk of the NLRB. We're right back after this.
We're smart policy. And sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Forging the Flame of Justice, Interfaith Worker Justices National Conference in Chicago, brought together hundreds of clergy from all over America. Interfaith Worker Justice Public Policy Associate Tom Schellebarger says attacks on workers' rights fly in the face of religious teaching and values.
The assault on workers
and worker organizing in particular, it really strikes a discord with religious leaders. Religion by its very nature is communitarian, and the economic philosophy that's behind most of the attacks on worker organizing is very individualistic and materialistic. It runs counter to what most religions teach about who we are as human beings.
Schellebarger says the work of Interfaith Worker Justice upholds the dignity and rights of workers.
For Interfaith Worker Justice, our focus is on how do we allow workers to have a voice and a say in the work that they do. If we believe in democracy, then we believe in individuals having the right to be a part of what determines their life. Nothing determines your life more than your workplace.
The AFL-CIO's Union Summer Internship Program is underway with 45 students working in 8 cities on community and labor movement building projects. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that Union Summer gives young people an opportunity to give back to their communities as they help to rebuild the middle class and create a voice for all working people. Trumka says Union Summer is part of a young worker outreach program that also includes the upcoming second annual Next Up Summit of young workers in Minneapolis. About 125 workers at GM's Lake Orion plant took a strike vote on Wednesday. Results are expected as soon as today, after members have been notified of the results. The workers reportedly make less than $10 an hour working for a company called Link Logistics, doing parts logistics for GM inside that plant. The workers signed union cards to join the UAW, but have yet to reach a contract agreement. UAW Local 5960 President Pat Sweeney says the union is fighting for a living wage for the workers. The roughly $20,000 these workers earn annually is below the federal poverty line for a family of four. GM is launching the Chevy Sonic this summer at the plant, the only subcompact to be made in the U.S. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hard-working men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Standing tall against a multinational corporate agenda. The Rick Smith Show.
It would have been a lot easier had the president done as I said he should have done right from the beginning and passed the Employee Free Choice Act, giving workers the ability to join and form unions in a more timely fashion and to make sure that contracts are done in a timely fashion as well. So we're not talking about just like the Fieldcrest Cannon textile plant in Kannapolis, North Carolina. 25 years it took for those workers, those 5,000 textile workers, to get a contract. 25 years. Our system's not broken. what's interesting is, you know, yesterday we talked about one of the right-wingers who wrote the piece that, well, you know, businesses have to be sure that the regulations aren't constantly changing. And they're constantly changing, like that NLRB thing. Today, back in 1947, 64 years ago, today was the last change to the National Labor Relations Act. Today is when the Republicans, over the veto of Harry Truman, passed Taft-Hartley. Today. Amazing. Tonight, I've got Jim White on the phone. He's the organizing director of the Sheet Metal Workers International Union. Jim, thanks for taking time for me.
No problem. Thank you.
You know, I look at the history. Today, back 64 years ago, over Truman's veto, the Republicans rammed through Taft-Hartley, which changed the organizing climate forever in this country.
That's correct.
And, you know, we keep hearing the right now that they've, that the NLRB has come out and kind of just very common sense, in a very common sense way, streamlined some things, made things a little more, timely. The right is losing their ever loving freaking minds.
Well, I think what they're losing is they're worried about losing their big paychecks. You know, that they might actually get some employees that want to form a union and get a decent wage and benefit to support their families.
You know, I started thinking about today the because my take on this has been that, you know, when the NLRB was being used against workers, the Republicans, Fox News, the business community was thrilled to death. And I go back to the Kentucky River cases back, I think it was 2006, where they stole millions of workers' rights to organize away from them. Everything was fine and hunky-dory back then. But now, gee, we want to kind of level the playing field just a bit, and the sky is falling.
Well, and I think that's it from the start, Rick. They don't want a level playing field. You know, they want to play baseball, and they want to have their team on the field, and they don't want to give us a bat, a ball, or anything to play. They just want us to sit on the bench and say, you know, accept what we got, and if you lose, you lose. That's too bad.
You know, I look back at the labor history, you know, 25 years ago, 1999 on this date, 25 years it took for these textile workers to get a contract, and it really highlights the fact that we have had a broken labor law system in this country for so many years. And as organizing director there with the sheet metal workers, you've got to have some stories just to blow people's minds.
Well, and I don't know if I have one as bad as 25 years, but we have one we've been working on since 2002 called Austal USA down in Mobile, Alabama. And the poor workers down there have tried and tried again to get a union, and every time they turn around, the company does everything they can to stop it. I mean, the stories from there are horrible, what they've done, the way they've split the workers up, the way they've threatened workers, intimidated workers, fired workers. One young African-American woman, they put a noose upon her workplace. We've had two elections there. We've lost them both. You know, we're going back for a third time now. And like I said, it took us another 5 years to get another new election there. And it's just terrible what workers have to go through to get their voice heard.
You know, I look at this, and, you know, I was talking to somebody yesterday and said, you know, the penalties are so pathetic, and there's really no penalty for firing somebody if they find another job. So the incentive is to do that, is to fire a couple of people, to put the scare, you know, the scare of death into some others, and basically what you've just said. You end up losing elections because these folks break the law.
Yeah, and I think you said it there, too, and I don't think the average person understands that. You know, they threaten them, I mean, literally with death. We had one election over in Lancaster County where a young gentleman was a diabetic, and the employer came right out and told him, listen, if the union comes in, you will not have health care. And if you don't have health care, you won't be able to get your diabetes medicine. And, I mean, that's a threat of death.
Yeah.
And luckily we got that turned around, but like I said, again, it took years in court. But can you imagine a young person that's wanted medicine to save their life, they must take every day, and the employer telling you, you're not going to get it.
You know,
and with a straight face. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, what it does is it highlights what I've been talking about all week, which has been this idea. You know, someone on my Facebook page wrote that you know, all unions do are try and convince employees that their employer doesn't care about them. And, you know, kind of pushing this benevolent corporation myth. And I'm saying, look, there's no such thing as a benevolent corporation. There's some decent employers, sure. But at the end of the day, if it comes down to his kid eating or yours, your kid's going to be not eating.
Yeah. You know, we talk about it with our employers that are signed with us that are socially responsible. You know, they've agreed to a contract. They've agreed to uphold certain standards. Well, many of these other employers agree to nothing. You know, like you said, it comes down to either their kids are going to eat or your kids are going to eat. You know, we had an election with a company down in Delaware. The owner met with the employees in a captive audience meeting, put his gun on the table, and said during the course of a hearing, he only put it there so the people could see his gun because he told them how nice it looked. I mean, that's what they have to put up with. It's
wow.
Total threats. We had an election with a company in York, Pennsylvania. They put two of the biggest guys I've ever seen out in front of the polling place, and as people walked in, told them, if we lose, you're going to lose your job. We're telling you right now. And, you know, the undertone was there, that everybody knew what they meant.
It's amazing to me. And here's the thing, and this is what I don't think that most people understand. The Labor Relations Board was to level the playing field, because throughout history, from the beginning of employer-employee relations, the employer has had all of the power. They decide all of the conditions. They decide the wages. They decide basically everything. The only thing a worker has to decide is whether they're going to come to work or not.
That's correct.
And a lot of these rules, because there's some people on the right who are saying we should do away with the Wagner Act, we should do away with the Rail Act, we should do away with all those labor laws. Most of those laws pretty much mandate that you come to work, especially if you're a public sector worker.
Well, you know what a lot of those laws mandate, too, is that when you come to work, you go home with all your fingers and toes that you came with, you know, like OSHA. You just had a young gentleman that was killed the other day over in Lancaster County because the employer did not take the safety precautions they needed to make sure he went home at the end of the day. And a young gentleman, I think, was 26 years old. He died over there. You're supposed to be able to go home at night from your job and take a good living home with you to your family, not die on your job for some employer.
Well, you know, as I've always said, if I ever wanted to kill somebody, I would just hire him.
You know, you're talking about the new rules that they want. I mean, these are minimum rules. They want a quicker election. So what they're saying is the employer is not going to have weeks or months to beat up on the employees before they vote. The idea of the vote's supposed to be, it's supposed to be a neutral vote that the employee decides yes or no, they want to be in a union or not.
Yep.
They're not supposed to be strong-armed or intimidated or threatened or spied on, and yet they want it to be longer. Every employer tries to stretch out as long as they can so they get as much time they can with those employees to beat them up.
But at the end of the day, Jim, here's my problem with that argument. They've had, from the beginning of employment, from day one, to treat that employee decently, because as I understand it, and you being the head of organizing over there, you probably will be able to speak better than I can about this, but most people join unions because of conditions respect, not over wages and benefits anymore.
Well, and you said it. They had that employee since day one to talk to them. Do they need that much extra time to threaten them, to intimidate them? Let's have the election right away. If the employer is going to decide right then and there whether they were treated good or not, or whether they need a union or not. You know, large corporations, the day you walk in the door, they show you anti-union films why you don't need a union. If you go to Dick's Sporting Goods, if you go to Walmart, if you go to Burger King, your 16-year-old son or daughter going to work there is going to be shown an anti-union film. They're going to be making $8 an hour, going to be told why they don't need a union. What they should be told is, maybe you got to get a better education to get a better job here, because they're not going to do the right thing for you.
Yeah, and that's the sad part of all this. And what I found is that, you know, I've been asking people, what does NLRB stand for? And most people don't know. And what it's kind of highlighted to me is we don't know what our rights are. I think we've been for so long allowed, what little right we have on the job to be taken from us and used against us that we don't know anymore.
That's correct. And little by little, every right's been taken away. And, you know, I talked to you the other month on what's going on in Wisconsin and around the country in the states right now, and they're trying to take a lot more rights away from us. They want to take our benefits, our pensions, our wages away from us, and they want to tell you they're doing it to do the right thing by the rest of the people in the country. And like you said, if the family next door to you can't afford to pay for their house, that affects all of us.
Yep.
You know, the idea is we're all supposed to be in this together and making this economy work for everybody, yet we have the top 1% that's taking all the money out of this country and sticking it in their pocket.
And they're creating jobs. Didn't you know? They're creating millions of jobs in places like China and India.
That's about it.
Sad, sad stuff. You got any other stories? Because, you know, what I'm trying to get to people is, you know, that this isn't as easy as the right makes it out to be. All I've been hearing the last couple of days from the Fox types is, well, you know, if I wanted to, I could just join and sign a contract. I'd join anytime I want. It'd be easy. That's not necessarily the case.
But I'd love to see employees do that. I'd love to see the average person, if they think it's so easy, walk into their employer tomorrow and say, listen, I've signed a card, I want to join a union, and see the reaction you get. Probably a majority of them are going to get fired on the spot. Even though it's illegal, like you said, the employer would rather fight it in court because they know it's going to take months, if not years, to get that employee back to work, and they'll prove a point. And the only thing they're going to pay them is maybe some back pay if they don't get another job in between that.
Yep.
Like you said, we've been through hundreds of elections. We see it all the time. We've got a pretty good record. We win a lot of elections, but we do that because we're smart. We make sure we get the employees together. We try to show them what the real thing is going to be, and we let them know up front, this is not going to be easy. It's not going to be a walk in the park. If you really want this, you're going to have to fight for it, and you're going to really have to put the time and effort into it.
Yeah. Last question I've got for you, Jim. You know, the frame has been that you're basically a salesman. Have you ever sold anybody on the idea of joining a union?
Listen, I'm not the one that forms a union. It's the workers. But I'll tell you what, I've never sold anybody in a union. What sells them is their employer. The worse he treats them, the easier it makes it for me to come in and form a union.
Yeah, and you look at what's going on.
They do my job for me. If it wasn't for corporations out there, we wouldn't need unions. It's real simple. They're the ones that force it. They beat the employee up so bad that they got nowhere else to turn that they decide it's time to get together and work together to make it better for themselves.
That's exactly it. Jim White, Organizing Director with the Sheet Metal Workers International Union. Jim, I appreciate your time. Always great talking to you, brother.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Right back after this, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Right back.
Come on, Obama, do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Making the blue blood see red. The Rick Smith Show.
The thing, if the world were to end tonight, you could thank John Payne for Happy Hour. Before I get into this, you know, the economy's going not so great. People are struggling to get by. We need a jobs program. We need health care. We need education for our kids. We need all of this stuff that government is generally an integral part of. Yet we've got Republican State Representative John Payne, who has ginned up support for this bill to extend Happy Hour. They actually took time on a legislative calendar to extend Happy Hour. Now, Happy Hour can be 4 hours a day. So, you know, those folks who are unemployed, and I can hear it coming now. I can hear the Republicans fretting in the future going, you know what, we extended happy hour to 4 hours a day, and those unemployed people took their checks, and that's all they did was sit in happy hour. I'm going, really? And it was a big vote, 174 to 24. And the governor, he's going to sign the bill and happy hour for everybody. It's also going to allow restaurants with liquor license to serve their spirits at catered functions off their premises. So be able to sell wherever they want. They're also going to remove the 2-year residency requirement for applicants for manufacturing and distribution licenses, making it easier for business. I'm going to create a $250 annual permit for the limited wineries, you know, who sell their products in satellites, these 5 satellite locations. They're going to open up the farmers markets. Unlimited number of farmer markets can then, you know, sell their liquor. So interesting stuff. And you can thank John Payne for that. Personally, I think there's so much more to be done. But, you know, part of me says, you know, when the legislature is in session, when the guys in the House and the Senate come here to Harrisburg, they need something to do after work. So an extended happy hour might just work for them. Maybe just work for them. I don't know. You know. Or maybe, you know, for the people who don't have health care, they can just go drown their sorrows. For the people who, you know, don't have jobs, you can just drown your sorrows 4 hours a day. Happy hour. Because we can have cheap booze and chicken wings. I love cheap booze and chicken wings. When I was a younger man, we used to hit up a happy hour every night of the week for free wings and quarter beers. Life was good. Granted, I wasn't much good to society back then, but, you know, there it was.
Are you saying that alcohol doesn't give you a clearer mind? I'm shocked. Actually, the truth be known, I've never known any human being ever to have a clearer mind upon consuming alcoholic beverages. So I'm not so sure that's such a good idea to extend happy hour.
Well,
just a thought.
You gotta extend. People are happy at happy hour. Didn't you know that? Happy. How many people know the singer Katy Perry? You know, she is what she is. She was interviewed by Rolling Stone, and she said that she had recently had this political awakening. She told the magazine she worried about the role of money in politics. Now, stop and think about this. This is a teeny bopper, just post-teen little pop star who said, you know, I got a problem with all the money in politics. And I'm kind of outraged that Americans don't have health insurance. I'm kind of outraged that we don't have a universal health care system. She says the fact that America doesn't have free health care drives me effing absolute crazy, and it is wrong. Wow. Maybe there's hope for this country yet. And her fellow pop star, the Canadian guy, who they asked, you know, a couple months back if he would ever become a U.S. citizen. And he said, no, why would I do that? You've got a dysfunctional healthcare system.
Absolutely.
Because he's Canadian. And you look at what we're talking about doing. You look at the Ryan plan. We're going to destroy Medicare, the only thing that actually works for people. We're going to destroy that. We're going to destroy it, and we're going to put it into the private market. Now, Ryan, you know, he's become pretty much a star of the Republican Party. All the radical right-wingers, they love him, man. Oh, he's got such charisma and such courage and intestinal fortitude. 26% of the people in Wisconsin view him unfavorably. 23% of them see him favorably. The rest don't know. Going, how can you not know? By a margin of 57 to 34, people who responded to this poll, the Bloomberg National Poll, said that they would be much worse off if Paul Ryan's plan were put into action. Privatizing Medicare would make them worse off. 57% of the people said it would make me worse off. What I find interesting about this whole thing is they're trying to sell this privatization scheme as a federal insurance program. We're going to have a federal insurance program. It's federal health care. You know, it's a federal health insurance plan. You're going to be okay. Don't worry about it. When all it is a voucher. Here's your lottery winnings. Good luck on your own. So they went to some people and they said, you know, what do you think of Paul Ryan? And most people are saying he's a polarizing figure. This guy, Jason Young, 37, a video game producer, said, I don't like the focus he's made. I don't like the programs he's playing with. Ryan's plan is too draconian. And I think the cuts to Medicare here he's proposing are unfair and unrealistic. I agree. But even still, he supports the guy doing it. He's echoed praise for Boehner and for Ryan for, you know, having the courage to step up. This Ted Olson, a Lutheran minister from Wisconsin, said, quote, it takes some intestinal fortitude to actually step forward with a plan nobody else has. Well, how about this? I got a plan. Here's a plan. Why don't we shoot all Lutheran ministers? That would bring down the population. I got a plan. Anybody who has a left foot, we kill them. That would bring down that's a plan, isn't it? So by saying that I'm in favor of his plan, I give him credit for having a plan. Well, there are a lot of plans out there. Most of them suck. Like this one. Here's the thing, and this is the part that surprises me. Most people are saying, you know what, we need to give Obama's plan a chance. He got a more favorable reaction, saying, look, you know, this is going to bring down some of our costs. Let's give it a shot. Instead of saying, hey, let's destroy what we've already got, why don't we consider something else? You know, maybe trying to bring everybody in, bring the costs down for everyone. And I just, you know, I look at these schemes that the Republicans come up with, these voucher schemes. Oh, we're going to have block grants to the states because it's going to bring the cost down. Well, how exactly is it going to bring the cost down? It's going to bring the cost down by kicking people off the rolls. That's the only way that happens. By less care. That's the only way that happens. And I look at this Senator Richard Burr from North Carolina. He was... And it's one of these things that just drives me nuts. He was talking about an article that he had read in the New England Journal of Medicine. And he was saying that kids who have Medicaid are having a hard time getting health care. They're having a much harder time than the people who have private insurance. And my original response was, there's that FCC thing. You know, no dung there, Sherlock. kind of get that. People with private insurance generally are seen first. So I guess this is his rationale. Since these kids with Medicaid are having a little more difficult time getting access to health care, we should scrap it so they get no care. I mean, that's what I'm taking from his position. He says now the whole debate that we're having, does Medicaid as currently constructed work? He says it can sometimes that working because of all of the information is telling us it's not. It can't be sometimes something that's working because all the information is telling us that it's not. Well, what information? Well, the information in this journal is saying they're having a little more difficult time. But they're still being seen. So the Republicans are saying, well, what we need to do is we need to give block grants to the states so we can have less federal funds going in and give the states, you know, more flexibility. And that flexibility means we can cut people off the rolls. We can do all kinds of other things to make the hoops higher, the hurdles higher, the obstacles more difficult to maneuver. And, you know, I look at this and that's the Republican way of thinking. If we can just make it harder. If we can just have one of these bizarre block grants. And Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick went to this hearing and said, look, his state couldn't maintain Medicaid with the block grant that the Republicans are talking about. Just couldn't do it. He says, quote, there is about a $23 billion cost to us in cost shifting over 10 years. A state with a strong balance sheet like ours cannot absorb that and provide the same level of benefit. So you make a decision, you cut benefits, or you cut people. And that's the shtick right there. That's what they're planning on doing. And they worried about during the Health Care Act, they kept talking about they're going to ration care. They're going to ration. What do you think this is? What do you think this is? Oh, we're not rationing. You just don't have health insurance. And you don't have access to it either, Jake.
Well, I mean, it's common sense. You know what will happen. The true cost of the health care will outpace the amount of money you're getting from the feds. And you're exactly right. The only alternative then is to either cut benefits or cut people off the roll.
Yep.
Duh. Those are the only choices you really have.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's the game plan. Anyway. It will get worse. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Julia Ramsey, political director of Action United, right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, changing America for the better.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make history happen!
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got a rate so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer's a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
For summer, and now go get a job because you can't afford to go to college. That seems to be the message from the governor. Today in history, on this day, 1972, President Richard Nixon signed into law the Higher Education Act, which includes the groundbreaking Title IX legislation. Title IX barred discrimination in higher education programs, including funding for sports and extracurricular activities. As a result, women's participation in team sports, particularly in collegiate activities, surged with the passage of this act. And ever since 1972, our friends on the radical right have been working to destroy it, along with public education as we know it. And you look at what's going on here in the state, trying to ram through this voucher bill, this lottery ticket bill, if you will. And unfortunately, not much luck, but, you know, with the money that they've got, it's not going away anytime soon. That's why I've asked Julia Ramsey, political director of Action United. ActionUnited.org is their website. Julia, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you very much for having me on, Rick.
You know, I look at this voucher bill and this SB1, and it just won't seem to die, given all the money that's been pumped into it from outside the state.
Boy, you know, we're really feeling it, especially in Philadelphia. you know, normally the voucher bills would have just been supported by the conservative Republicans, but we have a whole host of urban Democrats supporting the bill, so it's just, I feel like it hurts us even more because our own are leaving us out to dry here.
Well, I mean, I think, and there's, you know, I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. The schools in the neighborhood had something to be desired. I think most of it was the fact that it was a high poverty area, and it had some societal problems that went along with it. And I think that, you know, this is being presented as the silver bullet that's going to save their communities. And I don't think it's going to be, but I'm curious what your thoughts are.
Well, you know, I think that that's how they're selling it, but it's disingenuous to say the least. You know, we have struggling schools throughout the poverty-stricken districts throughout the state. It's not just Philadelphia. It's not just Pittsburgh. It's not just Harrisburg. It's many rural areas, and even some of the suburban school districts. It just don't have the same kind of funds as the more affluent districts do. You know, we've been trying to solve that problem over the past few years and trying to fund education more equitably in the state, and we've been doing a good job. You know, the governor has decided that school funding is not a priority, to say the least. You know, he's set to slash school budgets, and they're then turning to the school districts of Philadelphia and saying, see, these poor school districts, they're never going to be able to teach their children well, so we need to rip kids out of their schools and put them into private schools. And here's $7,000 and go do that. But it's just not the truth. I mean, you just can't go to private schools on $7,000. They're very difficult to get into. They're difficult to stay in. And we're going to be ripping more funding from our already just battled public schools who are just fighting tooth and nail just to keep their doors open.
Right. You brought up the fact that there are some failing schools. And the report that I saw said there are 144 across the state. And that's out of some 3,400 schools.
Right.
And I look at this SB1, I look at this voucher plan, that this lottery system that they want to set up, and I say, you know, is 144 schools really worth destroying 3,400?
No, it's not. And, you know, I don't think that we should turn our back on those 140 schools. I
Absolutely
mean, we really
not.
Need to be focusing funds in these poor schools. These are the people that need our help the most. These are the communities that are most stricken, you know, by high unemployment, by crime. And, you know, they're not getting a great education. We need to be investing in these young people so that they, you know, will have a better future. And it blows my mind that this is, you know, this debate comes up every 10 years, but this time it's got some real steam.
Because it's got billionaires behind
it. We've convinced some of the people on our side that this is a good idea.
And we've got billionaires behind it. One of the things I asked a Republican state senator here not too long ago was, you know, when I get one of these vouchers, if you can ram this through and I get one of these lottery tickets, can I go anywhere? And he's like, sure. I said, so because I will do this if I get my lottery ticket, I'm going to take my children down to Abington's Friends School down in Philadelphia, and they're going to pay all the costs, right? And he said, yep, my kids are going to get in. It's going to be covered. That's not reality, though, is it?
No, and, you know, we're hearing the same thing here. We actually had a voucher tour this afternoon where we went to several of our state legislators in Philadelphia, and we talked to them. And co-sponsor of the bill, Senator Williams' office, sort of offered the same example that, you know, you can take this voucher, you can go to Germantown Friends, Abington Friends, Baldwin, Agnes Irwin, all these really, like, great private schools we have in this area, and they have endowments, right? They'll give you a scholarship for the rest.
Well, and how much is Abington or some of the other ones?
I would guess in the mid-20s to low $30,000 a year.
And this voucher is going to be $7,000-$8,000?
Yeah.
I don't know very many working people who can afford the difference.
No. And if these schools have these huge endowments and all they want to do is give scholarships to thousands of poor children, why aren't they doing it already?
Excellent point.
It's just a lie.
Yeah,
July.
And the thing that bothers me is how this is being sold is, one, the parents and the child are going to have the choice. And as we've just pointed out, you're not getting into Abington Friends unless they want you. And two, it's not going to cost the taxpayers or the school districts any money. It's free.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're just going to be pulling out that $7,000 per student that decides not to go to public schools. You know, and the way they see it, that, you know, that means there'll be more funding per student in each one of these schools. But if you have 30 kids in a classroom and you pull out three, you have 27, do you have to pay that teacher any less money because she's only teaching 27 then?
Well, they'll want to.
So, you know, they're just going to be pulling out funding. And, you know, when we're already cutting the school budget so much in our poorer school districts, can we really afford to cut more?
Yeah, I agree. You know, here's the thing. And admittedly, there are 144 schools that are having trouble. I say, why can't we focus on them? Help them?
Well,
why destroy them?
We have a really great idea. I just saw that the surplus is now $675 million in the
yep.
state. We need to spend all that money. We need to restore the school budget cuts. And then, you know what, maybe we should start taxing Marcellus Shale. Maybe we should get something out of this.
Yeah, but Julia.
Find
Julia,
revenue streams.
Yeah, Julia. The most powerful man in Pennsylvania, Grover Norquist, said no.
Well, you know. That's why the people need to start saying yes.
Yeah, in fact, you know, we got Grover, and I love the Grover Norquist clip because it really shows how this guy thinks of government.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
That is the Republican game plan.
Mm-hmm. And what's so upsetting with this voucher plan is that the same people have funded some of our Democrats. And, you know, I really do believe some of the Democrats who are supporting this have good intentions. They have schools that are failing, and they don't know what to do. I believe that other people are taking the same money, and they're allowing themselves to be allied with people who want to destroy government and destroy public education. We need to first send a message to all the Democrats who are supporting this that they can't. I mean, like, this just goes against our values. We need to support every child, give them good quality education, equitable education. And then, you know, we need to send a message to the governor and to the legislature that we need to spend that budget surplus, and we need to start taxing Marcellus Shale.
So if Julia Ramsey, political director of Action United, had a magic wand, how do you fix these 144 schools then if we're not going to go to the charter schools and the vouchers and all that? What would you do if you had the wand?
Well, I think that's a pretty complex question. You know, the first thing I do with the wand is I would fund these schools in a manner which, you know, a school district like North Penn or Central Buck School District gets funded. You know, they have, you know, huge budgets that they can spend on many programs, not just basic education, many extracurricular activities, many programs to help students who maybe need a little bit more help, you know, maybe need that extra tutoring. You know, I would also invest in pre-K and full-day kindergarten for every one of these children in these schools.
Very good starts, and I would advocate for longer days. I would advocate for Saturday school. I would advocate for more experiential learning, more hands-on stuff. Lots of things that could be done other than tearing down the house.
Yep.
Simple
absolutely
stuff.
Right.
The website, actionunited.org. Julia Ramsey, political director over there at Action United. We've got a link at our site at thericksmithshow.com. Julia, great talking to you. Thanks so much for the information. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me on, Rick.
All righty. You know, I got to tell you, you know, I look at this, and what's frustrating to me on so many levels is what we've been shoveled, the pile that they keep shoveling. Oh, it's not going to cost us anything. Oh, we're going to be able to raise the scores, and kids are going to have choice. And oh, you know, it's not a handout to the religious schools. And oh, it's not a handout to the. This is about the kids, and the kids will have choice. And then you find out, It's about privatizing. It's about profitizing on education. Simple. Simple stuff.
I think more and more people, Rick, are talking to their representatives and their senators, and I think that's why. There's some of these representatives who initially maybe had a positive response to this bill are having second thoughts, and I think that's why there's, as of now, the bill hasn't passed.
Yeah, and there's some constitutional questions. I mean, if it passes, one of the things that bothers me, if it does pass and they implement it, and then someone challenges it, goes to the Supreme Court of the state of Pennsylvania, and they overturn it. How much does it cost to go back? That's the other part. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. We're going to take a quick break right back after this.
Joanna, and my job is to protect children, to help them live in safe and stable families. I work for you, the taxpayers, in Children and Youth Services. Every day, I help children and families in crisis. Many parents have lost their jobs, making it harder to keep a roof overhead, food on the table, and stress under control. My caseloads are huge, and waiting lists for critical services are too long. Yet I know the safety of these children depends on me. Even in tough economic times, legislators must fund these vital programs. Because if we don't help these kids now, the cost to them and to us will be much higher later on. Children don't only depend on me doing my job, they're counting on you to care about their safety. Contact your state legislators today. Demand that they invest in programs that prevent and treat child abuse. Because a child in pain shouldn't have to wait.
Brought to you by SEIU Local 668. Visit our website at SEIU668.org and join our human services campaign.
That old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
At every trough you stop to feed. With your arrogance, your ignorance and greed.
Now here come the cuts and redundancy. Through the absolute indifference, the avarice, incompetence, your arrogance, your ignorance, your greed.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Well, you know, here it comes. State of Pennsylvania just passed in the House this insane voter ID bill. You know, it just kind of makes you wonder. State Senator Dom Costa, he voted against House Bill 934, saying it's an affront to the voting rights of seniors and the disabled. State Representative Lawrence Curry came out and said, "A cradle of democracy, throwing baby out with the bathwater." GOP voter bill assaults seniors' voting rights under the guise of addressing voter fraud that doesn't exist. And as we talked about earlier with Dalen Leach, State Senator, four cases that they've had over the last several years. Four cases. And part of me goes, wow, four cases? Had that many? Oh, boy, that's a big problem. You know, I can think of four celebrities. Mitt Romney lives in California, voted in Massachusetts. Ann Coulter, I think about her voting over in Connecticut and then bragging about it. I mean, stop and think about this stuff, folks. This is not a problem. What this is trying to hold the vote down. This is, you know, trying to make sure your rights are taken away. Scary, scary stuff. But North Carolina, and, you know, again, you know, maybe some of us have it right. The governor of North Carolina, Beverly Perdue, today vetoed a bill requiring this exact thing. And you got a North Carolina, a governor of North Carolina, a Democrat, you know, you got to give her credit. Somehow a Democrat got voted in as governor of North Carolina. The Republicans, you know, rammed this through, sent it to the governor, and the governor has vetoed it. But here again, it's the same bill across the country that we're seeing. And what it's meant to do, it's meant to take away my grandmother's rights. It's meant to take poor people's rights away. Because, you know, they like Dalen said, they don't vote the right way, man. They just don't vote the right way, Jake. And, you know, it's one of those things that at the end of all of this, we need to figure out how to get right. And we're going to spend an awful – stop and think of how much money this is going to cost. Remember, they keep telling us, Jake, that we're broke. We're broke. We don't have the money. But yet we're going to set up this expensive system to make sure that people get these cards. Really?
It's voter repression, just like the attack on public employees is voter repression. Suppression. Yeah, not repression, suppression. I'm laughing about it, but it's very serious. I mean, the Republicans are playing hardball. Again, they're playing the game of politics better than the Democrats. They know how important the 2012 election is, and they know that if they can reduce the number of state and federal employees, they can reduce the Democrats' voting bloc, that power. And it's the same thing with this voter ID bill. It's absolutely, absolutely geared to keep as many people as they can away from voting. And the people who are there, they are targeting, will be Democrats. This is pure power politics at the expense of our democracy.
And we're going to be the ones footing the bill.
There is nothing more sacred in our democracy than the right to elect those who represent you, and these Republicans are shameless in taking that basic right away.
Amazing stuff. You know, I just, again, you know, you know what it is.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome? Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
And that's what they know. That's what they know. Because what they're seeing, they've really got to hold the vote down this time, because they're seeing the Tea Party fizzle. They're seeing that whole Tea Twizzler thing fizzling out. And you look at what's going on in Florida. Florida, you're seeing the Tea Twizzlers just basically fall off the map because of what's going on down there. Their unfavorable ratings, 3-1. 3-1. 68%. I mean, really stop and look at what's going on here. Look at what they've done to Florida. And that's because they put a bunch of Tea Twizzlers in power. They put a bunch of people into control and the levers of government. This guy, this criminal, Rick Scott, who basically hand everything over to business at the expense of workers, at the expense of the citizens. Just amazing stuff. On the presidential campaign, to twist gears just for a second, Newt Gingrich came out with a new statement. He was on Neil Bortz's radio program today and basically came up and said the whole reason that his campaign has imploded is because the evil media. It's the evil media. They focused on it because they realize how dangerous he is, how dangerous a campaign he's going to run is, and how hard it's going to be for Obama to beat him. I'm a dangerous man, and they're taking me down. No, you're a crackpot. Stop.
Well, I think his big problem might be it appears that he let his wife be his chief political advisor.
Also on the,
but then again, she sleeps with him. I guess that gives her an advantage.
I wouldn't bet on that. Here is the latest on the Herman Cain train. The latest campaign stop, the whistle stop, with at the group American Principles Project. Herman Cain said that he would literally appoint the CEO of Shell to his EPA advisory board. Basically, put the polluters, the gas, the oil, the drillers, all those people in charge of the EPA. And are you surprised? And I think if you were to ask every one of the Republican nominees, if you'd ask every one of them, I think they would all kind of regurgitate a similar sentiment that, yes, well, you know, the people who are closest to the problem. You mean the people who are doing the problem? You mean the people who are making the mess? Those are the people we should talk to on how to clean it up? Oh, you mean like self-policing? You mean the self-policing they're not doing now, which is why the EPA is supposed to be watching them? Is that what you mean? Oh, I see. Yes. Yes, you are so right. We should really put the drillers in charge of themselves. And you know what I'll do when I go home? I'm going to put my five-year-old son in charge of the cookie jar. I'm just going to say, here, son, guard the cookie jar. Guard it with your life, and by all means, don't eat all the cookies today. And I guarantee I will go back in an hour, and they'll be gone. But I will have made sure that he self-policed himself. Man, are we just nuts or what? Sarah Palin back in the news. Evidently, you know, yesterday we said she quit again. She quit the trip to the Sudan, which I guess she still quit, but, you know, so did the other guy. So she can say, well, he quit too. Kind of like my two-year-old. But I guess the bus tour, she's claiming the bus tour is on. Now, help me with this, Jake, because maybe your definition of quitting different than mine. She's back in Alaska. The trip has stopped. She doesn't know when it's going to start. She doesn't know where it's going to go, but she hasn't quit. Now, my definition is you've quit. You don't know where you're going. You don't know when you're going to start again. Is that not quitting?
No, I think so. I think the truth is she never intended to run. I think she just every now and then likes to get her name out there. It enhances her. It enhances her visibility. It helps her sell books and make more money. She can ask more money in speeches. That's what it's all about. Let's be honest here. I don't think she's seriously considering running for president. She just likes to play the game.
No, I'm not worried about president. I'm talking about her bus trip.
Oh, her bus trip. Oh, well.
The One Nation Tour. Sarah, Sarah, Sarah!
I mean, the whole nation's holding their breath, I'm sure, on that one.
Well, and here's the thing. I think she quit because everybody stopped paying attention to her. Nobody, you know, you remember the night that all those people stayed in Gettysburg waiting for her to show up, and she never did because she was holding her itinerary close to the vest. Don't want those media types, those lamestream media people that she keeps jabbing her jaws to follow her. She kept it real close, and she stood the people up. Well, eventually people got tired of being stood up, said, screw her, I'm going home. No more news coverage. So she's out there by herself with her family and the kids going, you guys are still here? Where are my fans? Where are my adoring? Where are the film? Where are the cameras? And nobody paid attention to her, so she went home. And now she stirred up a little controversy so that if, heaven forbid, she decides she wants to get in her expensive bus and make another trip, somebody might pay attention. I mean, that's all I can think of. And I keep asking the question, who cares about this dimwit? Who really cares about her? And the sad reality is there are a lot of very, very twisted people who hang on everything that this woman does. And I go, why? Why? And here's the thing. She claims she got called for jury duty, which is why she quit the big trip. If I'm the judge, I don't let her anywhere near the jury because she's going to quit and hang my jury. I can't have a quitter on my jury. As a judge, I would draw the line. No. Anyway, Like I said, the Republicans here, I'm anxious to see what the vote turned out to be. We're going to take a look during the break. But they have passed this insane assault on voters' rights here in the state of Pennsylvania in, you know, the 10:30 hour. I thought they were only going to do things during the day, like thieves in the night. We're right back with Andy Hoover, legislative director from the ACLU. We're right back after this.
Proudly blue in an ocean of red. Rick Smith.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Forging the Flame of Justice, Interfaith Worker Justices National Conference in Chicago, brought together hundreds of clergy from all over America. Interfaith Worker Justice Public Policy Associate Tom Schellebarger says attacks on workers' rights fly in the face of religious teaching and values.
The assault on workers and worker organizing in particular, it really strikes a discord with religious leaders. Religion by its very nature is communitarian, and the economic philosophy that's behind most of the attacks on worker organizing is very individualistic and materialistic. It runs counter to what most religions teach about who we are as human beings.
Schellebarger says the work of Interfaith Worker Justice upholds the dignity and rights of workers.
For Interfaith Worker Justice, our focus is on how do we allow workers to have a voice and a say in the work that they do. If we believe in democracy, then we believe in individuals having the right to be a part of what determines their life. Nothing determines your life more than your workplace.
The AFL-CIO's Union Summer Internship Program is underway with 45 students working in 8 cities on community and labor movement building projects. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says that Union Summer gives young people an opportunity to give back to their communities as they help to rebuild the middle class and create a voice for all working people. Trumka says Union Summer is part of a young worker outreach program that also includes the upcoming second annual Next Up Summit of young workers in Minneapolis. About 125 workers at GM's Lake Orion plant took a strike vote on Wednesday. Results are expected as soon as today, after members have been notified of the results. The workers reportedly make less than $10 an hour working for a company called Link Logistics, doing parts logistics for GM inside that plant. The workers signed union cards to join the UAW, but have yet to reach a contract agreement. UAW Local 5960 President Pat Sweeney says the union is fighting for a living wage for the workers. The roughly $20,000 these workers earn annually is below the federal poverty line for a family of four. GM is launching the Chevy Sonic this summer at the plant, the only subcompact to be made in the U.S. Pacifica Radio says it's riveting. This is what democracy looks like. Wisconsin's Worker Uprising is a one-hour documentary from Madison-based Workers Independent News. Get your copy today at laborradio.org. This newscast was made possible in part through underwriting support from the hardworking men and women of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith.
Oh, what you can call me tonight is angry. You can call me ticked off. Again, you know, you look at this stuff, don't these guys ever learn, like thieves in the night? I remember being in Wisconsin when they passed through the quote-unquote budget repair bill, where they rammed through a bunch of rule changes. They basically no real concern for the law, no real concern for the body of the legislature, just their blind faith ideology. I look at this House Bill 934, again, stealing the rights of the ballot box from seniors and poor people. But that's their gig, man. That's the only way they're going to keep power in 2012. I've asked Andy Andy Hoover. He's the legislative director of the ACLU to come talk to us about this theft, because some real hanky stuff went on. Andy, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, no problem, Rick. Good evening. Not a good evening, but good evening to you.
Not happy here, man.
I hear you.
What happened?
Okay, well, as you said, the bill passed, House Bill 934 passed 108-88. After hours of debate, they debated for 2.5 hours or almost 3 hours this afternoon. Then they debated for about 1.5 hours this evening. The debate would have gone on, but State Representative Mike Verib from Montgomery County, a Republican, rose to do a parliamentary trick called call the previous question, in which they cut off debate and go right to a vote on final passage. That happened around 10 after 10. There were some other motions and attempts to shut that off by the Democrats, but they failed. And so the Republicans cut off debate, and they voted on the bill, and the bill passed. All the Democrats plus Representative Chris Ross, a Republican from Chester County, voted no, and the rest of the Republicans all voted yes.
So basically, we've had enough of you. We've had enough of your mild bickering. We're going to do what we want anyway.
Yes, and Rick, I have to point this out. After the vote, a number of members got up to the microphone to submit their comments because they wanted to have comments on the record, and because the Republicans cut off the debate, they weren't able to submit those comments and speak them during the debate. Ironically, and perhaps symbolically, most of the members who did not get a chance to speak before the vote were members of the Legislative Black Caucus. I think that says a lot.
I think from a symbolic standpoint, it says an awful lot.
Yeah.
This has got to be something that's going to be met with massive resistance, and the hope is that they take that what happened back to their constituents, and maybe we see tens of thousands of people marching on this Capitol.
I hope so. There has been some discussion about, you know, the ways in which people's rights are being attacked. I mean, you do that every night on your radio show, of course, and we've had some discussions as advocates about the ways, and the multiple ways, and from varieties of angles that people's rights have been rolled back by this legislature or attempted to be rolled back. I find it ironic that this month of June, we have the state budget deadline coming up, June 30th. The state Senate was able to spend 3 days on abortion and rolling back women's access to reproductive health care. The state House was able to spend 3 days on voter ID and rolling back access to the ballot box. And yet here we are on June 23rd, and we still don't have a budget.
Well, again, as I've always been saying, it's not about running government. It's about running government into the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, what gets me, and again, you know, the most powerful, and I've been playing this clip all night, and it's one of my favorite clips to play because it really lays out the Republican game plan. But the most powerful man here in Pennsylvania, Grover Norquist.
I don't want to abolish government. I simply want to reduce it to the size where I could drag it into the bathroom and drown it in the bathtub.
You know, these are the people who want to destroy government. These are the people who want to destroy your access to the ballot box, your access to your government, and this is another example of it.
Yeah, and in some ways, you know, I look at some of the things from a civil liberties perspective, and I see some big government ideas, and this is one. I mean, this is essentially, the message here is you have to carry papers to participate in your democracy. And that is not... you know, Grover Norquist can talk about shrinking government, but the reality is that's a big government program. It's going to cost millions of dollars as well. I mean, the House Republicans' own fiscal note said that it would cost $4 million. The Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center did an analysis that estimated $11 million. Either way, we're talking about millions of dollars while they're trying to claim that they're fiscally responsible.
I thought we were broke. What happened to broke?
Right. Well, actually, Representative Samuelson from Northampton County got up during the debate and said, the cost of this bill is the same amount of money that we're cutting out of education grants. So that tells you something about the priorities.
Priorities, my friend, priorities. Mm-hmm. Where do we go from here with this? I mean, the reality is there's got to be some pushback because and I just talked to State Senator Dalen Leach here a little bit ago, who said that in the last couple of years there have only been 4 cases of voter fraud that this bill would take care of. So we're going to spend somewhere between $4 and $11 million to make sure 4 cases don't happen. Where do we go from here?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, I've had some people in the Capitol say to me, do you think the Senate is really interested in this? I appreciate their optimism, but I'm not as optimistic. I am concerned that the state Senate, will take this up. You may recall that the last time that The Republicans had a majority in both the State House and the State Senate. They did pass a bill like this, and it was vetoed by Governor Rendell. So I am concerned about the State Senate. I think we have to put a lot of pressure on them. I think that this circus tonight might actually help us, because I think this, I am hopeful the Senate will not want the same kind of debacle in their chamber that we saw in the House. But, of course, I thought that they weren't going to touch abortion either. We saw how that's played out. So we'll see. And then after that, you know, I don't expect Corbett to veto, although, of course, we should certainly put pressure on Corbett. I just think we have to roll out all the stops to try to stop this bill. There is a litigation possibility. This was talked about a little bit on the floor tonight as well. The Indiana case is not a open door to all voter ID laws. It actually kept the door open to future challenges. So, frankly, our lawyers are already starting to look at this. So besides the cost of the bill itself, it's possible the Commonwealth could face some litigation costs.
Again, I thought we were broke.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why would you do things where you know you're going to spend a lot of money for no real gain, and to do it in such a backdoor manner? I mean, this is what gets me. So I guess my last question is, tomorrow morning when people open up their newspapers or hear the morning report, what's the headline? What do you think the headline's going to be?
It certainly seemed I was watching tweets from some Capitol reporters that were clearly in tune with the chaos that was going on the floor of the House. I think that could be part of the story. Certainly we will talk about the fact that they're, A, cutting off access to the ballot box for a significant percentage of U.S. citizens. B, ironically enough, they cut off debate on that bill that cuts off access to the ballot box. So we'll be talking about that, and we'll see how the media spins this thing.
Like thieves in the night, they killed the opposition.
It is ironic this all goes down after 10 o'clock at night when, you know, a lot of people are past deadlines and a lot of people are in bed, and it's under the dark of night.
Yep, like thieves in the night. Andy Hoover, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on short notice and talking to us.
Sure. Thanks, Rick.
You know, I look at this again, and what frustrates me, again, like thieves in the night, just like in Wisconsin, you know, 3 o'clock, only they did it in Wisconsin, it was 2 o'clock in the morning. Because they had some debating they had to do. They had to, you know, kind of figure out how to maneuver around this. Here, I am just absolutely disgusted by the fact that you have got the majority party, these Republicans, who have rammed this through. And now everybody knows somebody. I think of my grandmother. My grandmother has not driven in 10 years. She does not have a valid driver's license. She doesn't have it. She's not going to go into town, downtown, you know, 30 miles away to get a photo ID. It ain't happening. Even if it's free, it's not happening. So she's just lost her right to the ballot box. Lived in the same house for 45 years.
That boat is bad enough. But to cut off debate, to not allow those people who are elected by the citizens of Pennsylvania to have their say in the hall, the very center of government, at a time when they're debating the pros and cons and the merit, is unconscionable. You talk about heavy-handed. You want to know why people lose faith in government? This is the kind of thing that turns people off.
Like thieves in the night. You would think. One would think, and there are still enough left there to remember the pay raise, that you just don't do this kind of stuff in the middle of the night. And I'm hoping the message tomorrow, I'm hoping the headline will be tomorrow, under the cover of night, they killed your voice. That's what I'm hoping.
And it could backfire on them, right? You know, people could be so angry that what they've done is turned people that might be maybe negative, or I should say neutral in politics, turn them into strong advocates for voting Republicans out in 2012, and I hope that's exactly what happens.
108-88 with only one Republican crossing over into the sanity. Now, look, Democrats can do nothing. Understand that. We have given the Republicans the unfettered power to do whatever they want. And like Andy said, you're seeing what they want. They want to destroy abortion. They want to destroy your right to the ballot box. They want to destroy workers' rights. They want to go down this path of destruction, repealing the 20th century budget. Well, we'll talk about that on the road. We're gonna ram that through. We've already got it figured out. We're just not gonna tell anybody. And like when we talked earlier, when we talked to Senator DeLeach, he's following the news like we are. They're not even letting him in the room. A state senator, he can't even watch. Can't even sit in the back of the gallery and peek over someone's shoulder. This state is controlled by radicals. By radicals. I don't know, man. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. What are your thoughts? Back after this.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
Come on, Obama, do it. Stand up, stand tall, stand firm. Yes, you can. The president is thinking about issuing an executive order that would mitigate some of the damage done to our democracy by the Supreme Court's dastardly Citizen United edict, which unleashes unlimited amounts of secret corporate cash to pervert America's elections. Obama's idea is simply to require that those corporations trying to get federal contracts disclose all of their campaign donations for the previous 2 years, including money they launder through such front groups as the National Chamber of Commerce. This approach says to those giants sucking up billions of our tax dollars for endless war, privatization of public services, etc., you're still free to shove trainloads of your shareholders' money into congressional and presidential races, but hey, just tell the public how much you're giving and to whom. Neat. It would be a clean, direct, and effective reform. So, of course, the corporate powers and their apologists are squealing like stuck pigs. Stephen Law, a Bush-Cheney operative who is now both a Wall Street Journal editorialist and the head of a secret corporate money fund, recently decried the very idea of public disclosure of contractor campaign contributions. When I was in the executive branch, he sniffed, mixing politics with procurement was called corruption. Yes, Steve, and y'all were corruption experts. Perhaps you've forgotten that we remember Halliburton, the Cheney-run corporation that helped put Bush in office and then was handed tens of billions in contracts, becoming the poster child of corrupt, no-bid procurement. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Obama, you can do it. Don't back down from these corporate sleazes. Sign that disclosure order. After all, if they're going to steal our elections, at least we should make them admit it to us.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
Going to this battle, take my union gun. Gonna end this world of slavery for this war. It's one you're bound to lose. You fascists, you're bound to lose.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's the hope. The hope is that you'll come together, you'll finally wake up, and we'll put down all of this ridiculous division. At some point, we've got to realize that either we're going to survive together or we're going to sink. We're either going to swim together or we're going to sink. What's going on here? You look what's going on across town here in Harrisburg, stealing your rights away. They want to push through this tort reform bill to steal more rights away. You know, at every turn, we are becoming more and more corporate friendly. And I got to stop saying business friendly because that, you know, look, I'm a business owner. You know, the reality is, you know, I'm pretty friendly to myself. It's these big multinational corporations who have no allegiance to this country. It's these big conglomerates who don't give a rat's behind about this country. They care about themselves and their ilk. And they're hired guns. And I look at our Supreme Court. 79% of the cases that have to do with corporations are sided with the corporations in this Roberts Court. I mean, stop at the almost 80%. almost 8 out of every 10 cases. I mean, you cannot be that wrong that often. That cannot possibly be reality. That you are going to overturn lower court decision after lower court decision, almost 79% of the time, and not have some ideological bend towards corporate America. And I guess, and I look at this Clarence Thomas situation, and our friend Ian Millhiser over at the Center for American Progress, he posts over at Think Progress Justice. He's pointed out that this real estate magnate, this Harlan Crow, has been given gifts to Clarence Thomas. Gave Clarence Thomas's wife $500,000 to start a Tea Party group. Gave Clarence Thomas a $19,000 Bible that belonged to Frederick Douglass. Served on the board of the American Enterprise Institute, a far right-wing conservative group pushing corporate interests. Gave him a $15,000 bust of Abraham Lincoln. These kind of gifts, this kind of handout, and this is only what we found out. This isn't the $1,000 handshakes, or this isn't the, oh, hey, you know, we'll push your charity, we'll push your organization. We'll pay for your trip to these speaking engagements. We'll pay you big fees. At some point, my thought is you've got to take back your democracy. And the courts are one of those places. I mean, look at some of the decisions that have come down. That AT&T decision. Basically telling AT&T it was okay to screw millions of consumers out of $30 a piece. Screw them all. We're not going to let them come together and file a class action suit to get that money back. We're going to make each one of those millions of people go get a lawyer and sue individually for that $30. Now, come on, we both know, we all know, nobody's going to go get a lawyer for $30. You're not going to sue AT&T for $30. They got you. And you just kind of, yep, I got it again. This case that was just decided at Walmart, the sex discrimination suit, basically thrown out, again, changing the way class action suits happen, saying, sorry, you can't do it. We're going to decide on the side of big business. And this other one that just came out today that really just kind of makes you go, really? Another 5-4 decision. Now think about this for a second, because it's a bizarre decision. It says that the drug manufacturers who make generic drugs, they're immune from state lawsuits if they fail to warn the consumers of the risks of taking the drugs. The generics, understand, they're immune. Now the brand name people, they're not. They're not exempt in any way. They still have to. They're the ones who have to, you know, follow all the rules. The generics, they don't have to worry about it. And I stop and I think about this, and help me with this, Jake, because I don't know what kind of medicines you take, but I know some people who do take blood pressure medication, and the brand name has all of the, you know, all of these side effects. This is what can happen, and this is, you know, blah blah blah, right down the list. They're responsible for this. So if And as I understand, most prescription drug plans make you get the generic if there's one available. Now, if there's nothing comparable, you get the brand name. But generally, automatically, it defaults to the generic. So if the generic doesn't have to abide by the rules of the brand name, what's going to stop the brand name from, one, making generics, or two, raising the prices, or three, stop doing it altogether. I mean, I'm really baffled by this decision. And, you know, if you stop and you think about it, if you think about this right-wing love affair they have with the 10th Amendment, where we just love states' rights, you know, the states, they're laboratories, they're the laboratories, the mother of invention right there in those little laboratories. Why would the Supreme Court take away the state's rights to be able to sue over the generics? Well, obviously why. We're talking corporate America, folks. We're talking one of the most powerful industries in this country. Amazing stuff. And yet, that's what stands. That's the rule of the land now. So if you're harmed by a generic, you don't have any rights. Oh, my goodness. You know, sometimes I wonder if we haven't just fallen down the rabbit hole. If that this isn't the whole thing. The whole end of the game.
And here's the bottom line on that. With the cost of health care keep going up and up and up, more people and more health care providers insist that you take the generic.
No, it's the default. It's not even, that's it, man. It's the end of the day. That's the default.
The only time they make an exception when they know that it will prove to be ineffective or dangerous to you as a consumer. That is the only exception. And to be honest, that's rare.
Last night we were talking about North Carolina and how North Carolina is going back and looking at all the people that the state sterilized over the years who are still alive. And there's some talk of trying to compensate these people in some way, shape, or form. The thought of paying them each $20,000 to sign off on suing them or whatever has come up. Of course, the Republicans in North Carolina are saying, no, hell no, we're not going to do that. But today there was a woman who, her name is Ellen Riddick. She had her first child, and really her first and only child. And the state of North Carolina had her sterilized. She claimed she was raped. The state said she was promiscuous. And they sterilized her. What Ms. Riddick said is, they said that I was feeble-minded. They said I was promiscuous. I've always been able to take care of myself, and I've never been promiscuous, she says. So how can people use these things to describe a child that has been abandoned or that had been raped by the neighbor and then again raped by the state of North Carolina? Of course, they're talking about paying $20,000, like I said. They're saying that there are some 60,000 women. There are reports that it's more than 100,000 that the states have sterilized over the years. Now, this stopped back in the early 70s, and I'm curious why it's come up now, but it has. And the reason I bring it up and the reason I think it's important is this is where we came from. And, I remember the movie Norma Rae and the story that went along with that. And one of the things that they were fighting against was this forced sterilization, where if you wanted a job working in the mill, they wouldn't hire you unless you were done having kids. And there's, if you listen to the argument about why women are paid differently than men, that's the argument. Well, women have kids and they're out of the workforce, and we can't invest in women because they have kids. And blah, blah, blah. Basically the same kind of stuff, man. And I worry about that. I worry about going back to the past and bringing the future right up to this date. So I'm going to follow that as, because some of these stories are heartbreaking. I mean, this poor woman, first one and only child, and she was raped. I mean, that's the part that just, wow, just amazing. Anyway, like I said, a majority of the Senate approved an amendment on Monday that would change the tort reform bill. It's headed to the House. But here's the thing, the House passed an identical bill to SB2. Earlier this year, but it was stalled in the Senate. So it's moved on through in the amendment process. Again, this whole idea of stripping your rights, stripping your ability to go after someone who's harmed you. And like Dalen said earlier, if a handful of companies are involved in this, a handful of individuals are involved in this, who do you side with? The people who then file bankruptcy? Because a lot of times that's what happens in these cases. Something happens, they file bankruptcy, now my responsibility to you is over. And then what happens to the individuals who's harmed? They're basically SOL. I don't think we should be doing things like that. But it is a very pro-business decision, don't you think?
Without question. Without question.
Anyway, going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Back after this.
Rick Smith.
Chances are, when you took a shower this morning, an AFSCME member made sure that water was clean. When you drove to work, an AFSCME member maintained the road. When you rode an elevator, an AFSCME member inspected it. I'm David Filman, Executive Director of AFSCME Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. AFSCME members enforce regulations, keep prisoners behind bars, take care of patients, protect the environment, and more. The work isn't glamorous, the salaries aren't high, but AFSCME members serve the public in every aspect of our daily lives. Chances are, you'll never see that AFSCME member working in a sewage plant, diving underwater to repair a bridge, or answering a 911 call. But aren't you glad they do? For more information, visit AFSCME13.org. We are AFSCME.
We make this thing happen!
With a PSECU home equity line of credit, you can use the equity in your house to pay for things you want. Whether it's a trip to the beach, a new deck for fun summer parties, or a little consolidation to get your bills in order, we've got our rates so low, you'll want to raise the roof. A 3.25 annual percentage rate will fit into any budget. Additional rates and terms are available. Summer is a great time to start knocking off items on your to-do list. Replace the gutters that didn't survive the storms. Make over your kitchen with new paint and energy-efficient appliances. Or maybe it's time to add a deck so you can enjoy your staycation in style. We've got fast approvals, no appraisal or credit report fee, and no prepayment penalties. Financing life is what we do best, so talk with us. For additional rates and terms, call 800-LOAN-555 or go to pseCU.com/life.
This credit union is federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration, Equal Opportunity Lender.
The most important issues of the day. This is the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. Now to find out what's going on in Washington, D.C., our good friend Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service. Victoria, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you.
Another example of my two-year-old probably being able to do a better job with the debt ceiling than our friends on the right, it seems.
This is fascinating. I think a lot of people thought Thursday was going to be a quiet day before the defund Libya vote tomorrow and the Afghanistan speech yesterday, just a quiet day for Vice President Biden and his debt gang. It didn't turn out that way when House Majority Leader Eric Cantor announced abruptly this morning he wouldn't go to today's budget summit meeting because negotiators were at an impasse over taxes, and so the session was pointless. And he basically called on Obama and Boehner to take it from here. Senator Kyle later joined him, realizing it was pointless and maybe he'd be caught out talking about taxes or something. But it was very, very interesting because it really was a very big surprise. And there were lots of questions about had he told Boehner in advance. Boehner's office says yes. There are questions about that in Washington because other Republican leadership certainly didn't know. But whether he did tell him or not, it certainly ensured a bad day for Boehner and a bad day for the debt talks because they didn't happen.
Yeah, how much does I wonder is, you know, the president got a good news, got a news day, and they just wanted to take some headlines away?
Well, there are often bonuses to many things, but I don't think that that was the intention. I think apparently they had a very difficult meeting yesterday because they've really done all the easy bits, and they're down to the point now where one side says there has to be revenue enhancement discussed. It doesn't make sense otherwise. And defense cuts and higher taxes, and Republicans say sharp cuts to health and retirement programs. And those are the two sides, and it's as simple as that, and they're getting nowhere.
And
it's
I think the vast majority of I think the vast majority of the American people see somewhere in the middle there, saying, look, okay, we'll take some cuts. We, you know, times are tough. We'll roll up our sleeves. We'll suck it up a little bit. But you know what? We've got to all be in this together, or we're not in it at all.
Well, I think many Americans do feel that way, and that's why I think people were sort of excited at the idea that after there was that ethanol vote by senators, that they might go along with the idea of getting rid of tax breaks for the big oil companies, things like that, eliminating tax breaks for other corporations and for the wealthy and hedge fund managers. I mean, that's one of the things Democrats are looking for, because that isn't an actual tax increase per se. You know, it's not saying we're raising your income tax from 20% to 25%, but it's just not going to, it's not going to fly, and we really do have a huge problem here, because it looks like Obama, Boehner, and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is going to have to get involved, and they don't have very long if they want to get it done before their self-imposed deadline of July the 4th, which is next week. But if they don't get that done, then they have to come back because then they have a recess, and then they've got a little bit of July to work it out in and get it sorted out and get it written. But it's going to be very, very complex at this point.
Yeah, I mean, do you see them continuing resolution down, and, you know, just kind of piecemealing this down the road until this becomes almost an election issue?
I don't see how they can. I mean, if the Treasury Secretary is correct, and just about every economist seems to think that this is a given, this is a fact, that the government risks defaulting on its obligations unless Congress acts to raise the debt limit on government borrowing by August the 2nd. We have a real deadline there.
Right. But I figure, you know, just bump it up just a little bit, kind of piecemealing it down the road.
Are they going to demand huge, huge cuts for that?
You brought up Libya a second ago. Tomorrow, I guess, a vote to defund, correct?
Yeah, two votes, two separate votes. One is a resolution, which is Dennis Kucinich's, Democrat from Ohio, which would defund completely. And the other one's interesting because it's legislation. It's an actual bill. And that'll be a straightforward, well, Kucinich is not being voted on. Scrap that. One is a use of force resolution to back the president's policy. That's going to fall. Not going to happen. So the one that is supposed to pass is legislation that would basically only allow funding for withdrawal, is how you could best put it.
Right. What's interesting to me, and look, I from the very beginning have been against this, so, you know, if it goes the way you're saying it's going, I'm not unhappy. But the reality is this is something that Republicans used to be in favor of. There's part of me that says, you know, if this were George Bush, this would be a no-brainer. But since this is a Democrat, doesn't matter which Democrat, they're against it just because it's him.
Well, there may be some truth to that. Mitch McConnell said something kind of interesting a few days ago, the Senate Minority Leader, when he said that, you know, the Republicans might feel freer to sort of speak what's on their mind now that there's a Democrat in the White House. And I think he was speaking very loosely there because I think they just feel free to speak their mind.
Interesting. The president's out of the White House tonight, right?
Yes, he's out of the White House. He was at Fort Drum, New York, earlier in the day, meeting with the 10th Mountain Division members, soldiers, who many of whom have come back from Afghanistan. Then he's gone on to two fundraisers. The one he's at right now is with big, big money guys at Restaurant Daniel, fabulous restaurant. But he's just come from an LGBT event at the Sheraton Hotel. Quite a big-end fundraiser, too, $1,200-odd ahead there.
Wow.
And there was some heckling on gay marriage, which he expected, but he didn't break any new ground on gay marriage, and some people thought that he might have done. He mentioned the New York legislation pending in the state Senate, stalled by Republican opposition. He didn't endorse it. He said it was right for states to debate the issue. Obviously, he talked about his achievements, and he was introduced with a long litany of his achievements. He talked about how discrimination against people was wrong, and talked about violation of basic tenets on which the nation was founded. I believe the gay couples deserve the same rights as every other couple in this country.
Yeah, well, I agree. What else is going on in the big city there in D.C.?
Well, the other thing that's very interesting is this announcement today from the Department of Energy, which is the administration, that the U.S. will release 30 million barrels of oil from its strategic petroleum reserve joining with other countries, the International Energy Agency, of 27 other countries, to release 60 million barrels overall over 30 days. And the reason is to partly maybe reduce the price of fuel a bit, but it's, and it might provide a jolt to the stalling economy. But the reason is because of disruption in the oil supply due to unrest in Libya and the Middle East. That's what we're being told.
Interesting. And I'm certain that the Republicans are against that, even though that during the Bush years, that's what they were calling for, to bring down the high price of gas, was to open up the reserves, as I remember it.
Yes, they're not happy. House Energy and Commerce Committee Chairman Fred Upton, he's the light bulb guy, said in a statement, "Releasing our reserves to calm the market is emblematic of an administration whose energy policy is irrational and counterproductive," whereas Representative Ed Markey of Massachusetts, who, of course, celebrates his day along with everybody else in Massachusetts, who's not a mobster, basically saying that this is the one tool America has at her disposal to immediately help drive down prices at the pump, and that deploying just a small fraction will have a huge effect on the everyday lives of American families and potentially on the health of our economy.
Well, let's hope that's the case, and let's hope it does bring down gas prices to help out those folks who are struggling. I know my gas bill, not cheap. Victoria Jones, I appreciate the time. Talk Radio News Service. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
All righty. Now to find out what we got going on across the street. What's going on tonight, Jake?
Thanks, Rick. There's been some release of some information on the contract that AFSCME has a tentative agreement with the state government on. A proposed contract agreement covering 45,000 state employees calls for no pay raises in the first year, but provides employees to receive step increments and or across-the-board raises in amounts up to 2% in the following 3 years. The agreement with the largest of the state worker unions also includes a loss of 2 6 days from 13 days a year to 11, but allows employees to continue to accumulate their days. Employees who do not take a sick day during the year receive an extra personal day, according to the source. It doesn't include some of the painful cuts included in Governor Tom Corbett's initial proposal, such as a pay cut or furlough days, but it does increase the health care contribution in the fourth year to 5% of the salary, up from the current 3%. Employees can reduce their contribution by participating in a wellness program. Retirees' contribution for health coverage will remain at 3% for the final year's salary for the life of the contract, but that contribution rate is cut in half when the retiree turns 65 and is eligible for Medicare. It also allows for employees to work a 4-day work week and be off 3 days, or schedule to have a day off every other week. Meanwhile, talks with the Service Employees Union, International Local 668, were still ongoing with Corbett's later negotiations at the time of this article. The other union that's in negotiations right now, they're still at the bargaining table. We're talking about the Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education, its faculty and coaches union, whose contract also expires on June 30th. A source within the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Facilities, which represents nearly 6,500 faculty and 450 coaches, said little progress had been made during that session. So as of now, AFSCME has a tentative agreement. They're going to take that agreement to their members. That's going to be voted on. It'll take probably a couple weeks, according to an AFSCME source. SEIU and the Association of Pennsylvania State College and University Facilities Union are still engaged in some tough negotiations. So there's progress on that front.
So no pay cut? Because you know, all the early reports were 4% across-the-board pay cuts, so
well,
it sounds like they did all right.
Apparently the union did okay, but let's be honest, there are some givebacks here. But I think considering the atmosphere, it looks like the union did okay.
All right. Terrific.
Governor Corbett says he would sign Harrisburg's bankruptcy bill. Governor Corbett has said on Thursday that he would sign a bill pending the state legislature that will clamp down on the ability of the state's financially troubled capital city to file for federal bankruptcy protection. Corbett responded to a question about the bill at an Unreal News conference and did not explain why he would sign the bill. His comment came in game after Senate committee sent the bill to the full Senate, where its fate is uncertain. It would also need House approval to reach Corbett's desk. On Tuesday, Harrisburg City Council approved a resolution asking the mayor to prepare paperwork for a bankruptcy filing. Under the bill, Harrisburg would be barred from filing for federal bankruptcy protection if it does not follow the advice of a state task force set up to give it financial guidance. In the meantime, the city is facing several lawsuits, including one from Dauphin County, over installment payments it has been unable to make on the incinerator debt. Much of the incinerator debt was borrowed in the last 8 years to overhaul the aging facility in an attempt to transform it into a moneymaker for the city. The overall cost have been much more than anticipated and took much longer to complete than city leaders originally envisioned. Again, that's a bad situation, and it looks like it's coming down within the next week. We'll know more about that. Some real problems for this city, unfortunately. An interesting case involves...
But if we all fast, if we all decide that we're going to fast and pray, everything will be okay.
You're getting into... I didn't get into that. I could have, but I didn't. Time didn't permit it.
If we just fast. And there's part of me that goes, if we just all starved, we wouldn't have to buy food and we could bail them out.
Well... I think maybe some of our listeners aren't quite sure what you were talking about. There's some controversy about the mayor and the fact that she's bringing religion into it. I don't have a problem with anyone, including the mayor, praying for the city. What some of the people who worked for had a problem was she demanded that her employees participate in what amounted to prayer sessions, and she's been criticized for that. But that's another issue, and maybe we can talk about that in another day. Article in the Harrisburg Patriot about Pennsylvania Senator Jane Orey. She is taking her case to court. She is trying to, her lawyers are trying to argue for double jeopardy on her corruption charges. Her sister, Justice Joan Maria or Melvin, did not participate in the decision by the higher court. The state Supreme Court ruled 6-0 that the lower Superior Court should consider the claim by Senator Jane Orey, a Republican from Allegheny County, whose first trial on charges she misused her public office for campaign purposes ended in a mistrial. The high court order said Superior Court should consider whether retrial should be barred on grounds that include the trial judge declaring a mistrial without considering less drastic measures. Jurors were deliberating in Orey's case March 3rd when Allegheny County Judge Jeffrey Manning declared a mistrial, saying there was evidence that critical defense documents have been doctored. In addition, the Supreme Court ordered the lower appeals court to consider whether the authenticity of the documents was before the jury and not the judge. That was the first point. Second point, whether prosecutors had time to challenge him. Third point was whether they were not material. And fourth, and maybe very critical, whether the mistrial was granted to preclude an acquittal. When I first saw this article, Rick, my inclination was to say there is no way she could win this trial. The initial report said there was a mistrial declared because supposedly her defense counsel used some documents that were, let's just say, allegedly tampered with, and I thought she didn't. Now I'm not so sure. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of this. Let's put it to you this way. There were some leading figures that were brought up on charges by then Attorney General Corbett. One famous Democrat, high-profile Democrat, is now serving 6 years. There's another Democrat awaiting trial. There's a third one that was indicted, Mr. Purcell from Philadelphia, who still, by the way, hasn't come up on trial. And she, by the way, was not brought up on charges by Mr. Corbett. It was the district attorney out of Allegheny County. So you can bet that this is politically charged, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in this trial.
All righty. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll wrap things up right back after this. Here is a rainbow.
engaging, intelligent conversation with a heart. The voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
Do you need a sign or promotional material for your business, campaign, or function? Then All Union Signs and Promos is the place for you. For years, All Union Signs and Promos has been serving South Central Pennsylvania with affordable, high-quality, union-made and American-made signs and promotional products. We want you to be seen. We set ourselves apart not only by being your one-stop, full-service sign shop, but also being able to tie that image into a full line of promotional products. Our dedicated staff will print, design, and deliver your most effective advertising tool on time and on budget. If you have a message, we have a sign. When you need your name on it, All Union Signs and Promos will do it with a memorable and unique union-made and American-made product. For more information about union-made and American-made products, visit our website at allunionsigns.com. That's allunionsigns.com. Or give us a call at 717-221-8888.
Is that old washer or dryer on the fritz and you don't have the bucks for a new one? Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well. Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211. How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave? Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211. Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
Your working class radio experience, where hard work, common sense, and rational thought are a reality. The Rick Smith Show.
Work it hard to make a left. Rich and from Rick. Father, son, left the candy on. Blue denim, head is big. Oh, 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 he's a working class man.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Remember, check out the website at therickSmithShow.com. If you missed any portion of the program, you can go to our website there at therickSmithShow.com and download our podcast there for your convenience, your entertainment. Also, if you want to contact me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. During the break, I got an email from David who said, quote, as a tree-hugging hippie who has never driven a car, I'm dismayed. My passport expired in 2008, and in this economy, renewing it has not been a valid option while deciding to pay my electric bill or buy food. And you know what's kind of weird about this whole scenario? Now remember, four people in the last several years have been convicted of something that this bill would stop. This is going to cost the state of Pennsylvania between four on the low end and $11 million to enact. At a time when we don't have the money. Just don't have it. We're broke. Remember? We're broke. We got to cut $1 billion from education. We got to cut 56% of the higher education bill. Those people, disabled people, out on your rear, out on your wheels. That's what they're telling us, isn't it? Yet, boy, we can sure spend an awful lot of time taking your right to the ballot box away. Amazing, amazing stuff. News from yesterday, another lawmaker, second time, another Democrat. Second time this month. I don't know what it is about June and Democrats drinking and driving. Come on, guys. Joe Brennan, the Democrat from Bethlehem, arrested yesterday for drunk driving. Earlier in the month, John Galloway, Democratic representative. And you know what? I don't do this often, but I understand. I do understand. I got to be honest. If I were a state representative or a state senator, I think these no-good sons of you-know-what would drive me to drink as well. I'm not justifying. I'm just saying I understand. I'm not saying it's okay. I'm saying I understand.
It sounds like you read the article. Brennan said, well, I've had problems with alcohol in the past, and he said, I just got out of negotiations, and he he drove back to his office. Maybe he should have waited to drink after he got to his office.
See,
do you think?
This, and I would love to know if he was one of the people who voted to expand happy hour. Because these are two Democrats who don't need to be anywhere near happy hour. I got to be honest, though. I would, honest, truthfully, if I were...
Need a
if
stiff
I
one.
Were, if yeah. I were one of these guys, if I were Dalen Leach or one of these representatives, one of two things would happen. I would be sitting in the cell next to him for drinking, or I'd be sitting in the cell next to him for murder, because I would reach across the aisle and strangle some of these people. See, that's why, you know, a lot of people look at politics as a, you know, it's just a game. You know, it's nothing personal. Just, you know, just business. Nothing personal. It's how things get done. We can go, hey, when we're done screwing over the citizens of Pennsylvania or we're done screwing over the citizens of the United States, let's go have a beer. Let's go play tennis together. No way in hell would I be one of those people. I'd be the guy reaching across the table going, you no good, South America. Which is why I am not a state lawmaker or in Congress.
Well, you missed one option. You know, some of them like to go to strip clubs afterwards, too, you know.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
It is when you're using a credit card of the state gave you,
well,
if you remember that case.
Yeah, well.
A state senator who lost his position.
Yeah, well.
Not too bright.
Yeah, well. Just don't use the, you know, the company card, that's all.
Use the state credit card to pay for his bills at a strip club. Wow.
You got to love it. Well, give him credit, man. Give him credit. I don't know if you saw the report. The star of Jackass, Ryan Dunn, was killed in a car crash with another person. Here's the point. The idiot Baptist church in Kansas, the Westboro idiots.
Westboro.
And I'm going, why? 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 Why would you go to this guy's funeral and protest this? And on their website, the Westboro Baptist Church, they would be picketing any public memorial for the proud sinner. Dunn, calling him a drab pervert who hawked pornography and porn-level filth to get rich from a perverse vintage generation. They also declared Pennsylvania as one of the most evil states to ever exist. So there you go.
And why is that?
I have no idea. Because they're Fruit Loops.
Are they saying that per capita we have more perverts? I don't know.
Because they're Fruit Loops.
You know, part of me says, Rick, and I'm serious when I say that, I think sometimes what they do, they're hoping that people come up and try to beat the snot out of them so they can sue them. And I'm dead serious about that.
I think they're just like Sarah Palin. I think they're all the same ilk. They just want attention. Nobody loved them when they were children. Nobody held them. See, you know, I go back to what I learned in school.
Lunch money victims?
Well, no. There was a psychology guy who, B.F. Skinner was his name. And he had daughters. And he had two daughters. And one of them he put in the Skinner box, which those of you who went through 100 level psychology know that, you know, the kids got all of the love and attention they needed through gloves and through, you know, just through the wall. They were fed. They got all the things they needed. The other child was held and affectionately loved and cared for like any normal child. I'm thinking the Westboro people and the Palins of the world were in the Skinner box, because the girl in the Skinner box, as I understand, is completely off her rocker. You know, just as I've been told, because you didn't have that early interaction, that early human touch.
Is she the lawyer?
She's the college professor. So
wow.
There you go. Anyway, I want to thank everybody on the program. Senator Dalen Leach, thanks for being here. Of course, Jim White from the steel, from the sheet metal workers, and Julia Ramsey from Action United. Great having you. And of course, thank you to Andy Hoover, to come talk to us about this insane, just absolutely insane theft of rights, theft of the ballot box in the middle of the night, just like thieves in the night stealing our voice. We'll be back tomorrow night. Have a good one.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@therickSmithShow.com or interact with us anytime at therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the Buddha sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous rain. The must is coming.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.